Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 11th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 21. I'm going to pick up where we left off, verses 17 through 27. Matthew 21, 17 through 27. And he, that's the Lord Jesus, left them and went out of the city into Bethany, and he lodged there. Now in the morning, as he returned into the city, he hungered. And when he saw a fig tree in the way, he came to it, and found nothing thereon but leaves only, and said unto it, Let no fruit grow on thee henceforth forever. And presently the fig tree withered away. And when the disciples saw it, they marveled, saying, How soon is the fig tree withered away? Jesus answered and said unto them, Truly I say unto you, if ye have faith and doubt not, ye shall not only do this which is done to the fig tree, but also if ye shall say unto the mountain, Be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea, it shall be done. And all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. I had a couple more verses. And when he was come into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came unto him as he was teaching and said, By what authority doest thou teach these things? And who gave thee this authority? And Jesus answered and said unto them, I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I in likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, whence was it, from heaven or from men? And they reasoned within themselves, saying, If we say from heaven, he will say unto us, Why did you not then believe him? But if we say unto him of men, we fear the people, for all hold John as a prophet. And they answered Jesus and said, We cannot tell. And he said unto them, Neither tell I you by what authority I do these things. Matthew chapter 21, verse 17 through 27. Okay, I guess we'll start off with, do we have any questions, Jan?
We have one at the moment. I'm not sure exactly what you want to do with it. It says, what happens when a festival gives you denial of press media accreditation? How can I appeal?
Oh, yeah, I saw that question. I have no idea. I don't understand the question too
I didn't
well
either.
To begin with. So I don't know. Maybe if they might want to try to frame something. But, you know, look at, with the people, we don't appeal anything. If we go into a courtroom, we have to open up a court of record if we don't want to get into their appellate system. And once you open up a court of record, then, you know, everything is direct. You get to sue them directly. You don't go to the appeals. You sue them. I'm not sure what exactly they're looking to appeal on that, though. So, was that the only question?
Yes, that's the only question.
All right. Are there any announcements or anything?
Robert might have something to add here, but he's got to be unmuted. I got to find him quick. Yeah, he does have some. Let me see if I can find him.
And as you're looking for Robert, let me just make a couple of notes here. I don't know whether Carl is able to talk or not, but I'm wondering if all things are well on the new website, the sheriff site, where people can join up, because I think some people are having some problems. Okay. Anyway, if people go up to powerofthecountysheriff.com or .org, shall I say, okay, we've got quite a few things up here. If you haven't been checking this out, we've got a lot of news up here, mostly video. Trump has given a couple of really, really great speeches, and we have that up there on the news page. So just click on news, and you'll be able to hear the speeches and a few other things. Also, if you click on news under the news where it says Constitution in Jeopardy, we have quite a bit of information here. There's a few new ones here that people might not have seen. About five down. Let me see. One, two, three, four, six down. There's a CIA agent, whistleblower, comes out and talks about the shadow government. This guy really gives a very, very specific, detailed description of what the shadow government actually is. So it's really good. And he also talks a little bit about Trump in a very positive way. And right underneath that one, there's another CIA agent, a guy named David Steele. He's ex-CIA. And he's talking about Trump quite a bit in his in this YouTube here, and he does make some really, really strong points that the elite are really shaking in their boots. They're on the run. Warrants are ready to fly. I heard talk of that nature on Fox too, about potential warrants and a few other people. So it's starting to come to the regular the regular news out there. That things are about to happen. But anyway, these are some really, really interesting videos, these two by these CIA agents. So if you haven't seen it, you definitely want to go check them out. And again, also, let me see what I got on the sheriffs. There's also sheriffs and the Constitution news under the news also. Let me see if there's anything specific. I mean, they're all good. If you haven't seen any of these sheriffs and different speakers, I mean, it's really great. Okay, nothing very specific, but they're all good videos. So all three of those pages are really good, informative videos. And I think the sheriffs are going to really have an appreciation of these videos. We're only putting news up there that really... kind of relates to the sheriff to some degree, the Constitution, the basic news concerning the Constitution and sheriffs and the Constitution and so on. So if you haven't been out there to take a look at that, you should. Jan, did you find Robert?
Yeah, two things. Carl is on speaker broadcasting, so he can't answer questions right now. He wants to know what are the issues with people signing up.
Well, I don't know. I know that I saw him try to sign up quite a bit, so I thought he was trying to check things out. I didn't see any real sign-ups, and I'm not sure whether we have to approve them. I don't think we should set up any approval. Let people sign up and then hit their email, and then that's it, they're joined. But other than that...
I can check on that later. I found Robert. He's hiding in the Q&A. I'll put him up there. There he is. He's unmuted, I believe.
Yeah, you got me?
Yep.
Well, there is news out of Nevada today. The other day, word came in that the White Hat FBI have been investigating Judge Navarro, and they caught her lying to them at least once. And I'm told that's why she changed her mind and released the defendants for pretrial release. But also today now, trial was to resume. The jury was in. But during this past week, the defense has been filing all kinds of motions, even a late night one. And so they sent the jury out, and they had an hour-long discussion about things, a little bit heated here and there, but in fact, one of the, all of the prosecutors were looking kind of long-faced and not smiling or anything. One of them asked the judge for 45 minutes to explain things, and she looked at him and said, "I thought you said you was all done explaining things to me." And he came back with, "Well, there, you know, a lot of new things are happening, and we're going to have to explain it." Well, what happened is, you know, all along they've been finding things that prosecutors have been hiding from them, you know, not turning over to them, and in fact hiding, trying to hide them from him, and denying that they existed. And of course, the defense has rooted them all out. And I know that not everybody knows what a Brady violation is, so it's where, in this case at least, the prosecution is hiding evidence, not turning out, you know, not being forthcoming with evidence to the defense attorneys. Well, one of them is bad enough, but the judge has now acknowledged 7 Brady violations. And so at the end of the meeting, they called the jury back in, and she dismissed them, told them to be back on Wednesday, if at all. And she made the statement that she wasn't sure yet, but this could end up in a mistrial or a total dismissal. And she sent them home. And then the court went into another sealed session for the rest of the day. Now, I did see a newspaper in Las Vegas posted an article later this afternoon, and in that they said that the jury would not be back until the 20th at the very earliest. I don't have confirmation of that. The only thing I do have confirmation of is that she told him to come back on this Wednesday. But anyway, the judge has obviously gone into CYA mode. And the defense is working hard for total dismissal. And that's where we stand at this time.
Okay, thank you, Robert. Is that it?
That's it for now.
Okay. All right, this sounds like good news. You know, look, we know that there's a lot of stuff going on. We don't know exactly. We don't know what is exaggeration and what isn't. But we do hear from the rumbles everywhere. I mean, everybody, even on, if you listen to Fox News, they're talking about big stuff coming down, big sex scandals. Our indictments are coming down. And we're hearing, of course, some over 5,000 and some over a couple of thousand. So it's very interesting. And we do know that they're very heavily on the case with the Russia connection, which turns out to be the Clintons and so on. Really, that's the connection, what's going on out west. This is going to really resurrect the Lavoie Finnegan case. I can't see how it can't. And I think it's leaking right into the courts also, and I think that's maybe another reason why things seem to be going pretty good. You know, not, we don't really know yet, but it seems to be going pretty good. So all of this, this case may be thrown out, and let's hope for that. And then people need to start going after these judges for restitution, the damages, how much time they've spent in jail when they shouldn't even have been in jail. They should have been out on their own recognizance. They should have been out. But
yes.
So anyway, and there was nothing violent here or anything, and there was no crime created anyway to begin with, you know, especially out in the Bundy Ranch one. But anyway...
Well.
Go ahead, Robert.
Well, so you know, the count on indictments has gone up to 9,000 now.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. You know, we're hearing all this rumble, and I think it's going to break in the next couple of weeks. You know, we've got the big tax cuts across the board. That's going well. I'll tell you what, his speeches... You know, every time he gives a speech, you think to yourself, I'm talking about Trump now, every time Trump gives a speech, you think, well, he can't outdo that one. And in my opinion, he keeps outdoing himself. There's so much great stuff going on. There's so much for him to report and so much happening. People really need to keep up on what's really going on and be prepared. The other thing, of course, is we need to remember, you know, let's not get too complacent just because Trump is making moves and people hopefully are going to be going to jail. This whole thing will revisit us again if we don't, if the people don't step up, become educated, and take control. It's only going to happen again.
I just had another piece of news come in to me that on the Lavoie killing, a second witness has admitted that orders came from the White House to kill him.
I think we should really, we've got the Lavoie Finnegan papers and everything up on our website, and it's been up there for quite some time. Those people who are interested in sitting on the grand jury on this one, they should be going through those videos and whatever information we have up there. And I think we should do some indictments. You know, look, if we can identify a few people up there. We know we can go after the FBI, whoever agent in charge, and we can go after the director of the FBI. We know we can go after the governor. We can tie those to all those in. And we also know there, I forget how many shooters that are identified on the video. We can call them John Doe shooter number one, John Doe shooter number two, and so on. And I think we should really seriously consider doing an indictment and getting this out to as many places as we can. Maybe if we send a copy to Fox News, maybe they'll report on it. Definitely we'll send something to Jeff Sessions and also to the president and so on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to be calling, we're having a meeting tomorrow, really to try to really get this sheriff's program going. And we're going to have a meeting tomorrow in the old room. It's going to be at 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the old room. Where can people find that information, Jan?
I have sent it out to every group that we have over the last day or two.
Okay. Do we have what if they go up to the Monday night call, isn't there a place where they can click on a button and then go to the Tuesday night call?
Yeah, there's information on how to go to the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night calls on the front page there.
Okay, so there will be the Tuesday night call Tuesday night call at 9 o'clock. Is there an 8 o'clock call also, or just the 9 o'clock?
Not Tuesday.
Okay, so there's a Tuesday night call, 9 o'clock, for the information. Go up to the Monday night call page, click on the page for the – let me go there myself and – be very specific.
It's also in the newsletter each week.
Okay, in the newsletter. All right, but if you go to the site, you click on the weekly call, top left side, and then you can click on, join our committee meetings. Is that the one they click on?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, join the committee meetings, and then you can go click on, I don't see Tuesday night.
No, wait a minute.
But it'd be the Wednesday night room anyway, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's Wednesday night.
Wednesday and Thursday night room. Okay. So there is no call on Tuesday night, I guess, right?
No, there is no.
Okay. All right. I know they've been meeting. I think some people were meeting on Tuesday. But anyway, tomorrow night, 9 p.m., go to the committee meeting page and just follow those instructions to get onto the call. And again, for those who remember, it's our old room, the room we had before this one. And the purpose of tomorrow night's meeting is going to be to discuss a plan for the sheriff's program. We really got to get moving on this. We haven't, we announced this last week, but I didn't see anybody. I saw a couple of people sign up. I'm not sure that the names went through. I guess all is well, right, Jan? There are no problems? Well, you're going to be checking that out.
Yep.
Okay, so Jan will be checking that out. Well, we'll talk more about it tomorrow. But we need all of our members to really start moving over there and to join. When you go through the process, you will come to a place where you'll ask for a donation. And I'm pretty sure it's very clear that we explain that you don't need to make a donation to join, whether it's a one-time or a weekly thing. But we do want to ask for it. After all, that's what that whole program is all about, is to try to collect enough money to be able to pay for our project, and that is to get the law, the knowledge of the law, into the hands of all of our sheriffs. And that's going to extend beyond that. Definitely we want to get copies of these books also to the president and some key individuals in Congress and other places. And that'll be very beneficial in order for them to really understand the Constitution themselves and the duty and the power and the authority of the sheriff. Tomorrow, or before tomorrow's meeting, maybe hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to make an announcement, but we're going to talk, we're going to try to get a meeting going with some of the leadership to see how everybody feels about going forward with an indictment on Lavoie Finnegan's assassination. We've been sitting on that for a long time, and I just feel the timing might be right now. I'm going on to a radio program, Gerard and myself, on Wednesday. Maybe when Brent comes on, he can give some information on how people can listen in. I think that's live. I'm not sure. But we've been on quite a few radio programs. I'm going to get a list together, and we're going to start calling up all of the radio programs we've been on in the past, see if they're interested in for us coming to revisit them, let them know what we're doing, what we've accomplished, and also to know about this sheriff's program. So we want to start getting the word out as far as we can that way. And again, tomorrow really is a plan to organize, to start phone calling in order to get people to come out to the website, give a donation of $5 a month or more, or maybe a one-time donation, $20, $50, $100, whatever people can afford. And let's start getting this program going so we can get that project off the ground. Now, again, I'd like to make this note very, very important. People need to think about this and realize this. People, you get complacent and they start to think, someone's got it now. We're not going to have to worry about this. No, we all have to worry about this. Trump can't do it himself. And again, no matter what you do, you get rid of these people, they're going to climb right back in again. Somebody else will pick up and do the very same thing again as time goes by. So we need to get educated. We need to get our sheriffs educated. We need to demand that all of our elected officials become educated in the Constitution, that is, in the common law, ultimately. And the people, we need to take control of the juries, the grand juries and the trial juries, as far as bringing them together, orientating them and preparing them for the service that they're about to give in the courthouse. This is how they robbed us. It wasn't so much with the money, although that does play a major role. Money was the big key thing, of course. But if they didn't control the courts, it didn't matter how much money they have, because they wouldn't have been able to accomplish their goals. They have to control the courts, and they do. Look at how corrupt these prosecutors are. Look at how corrupt all these judges are. I mean, it is constant the same, and that's at both federal and state level. It's just disgusting. But we need to make a move and jump on this wagon that seems to be coming by right now that we could take advantage of and get some leverage and get the word out and get some momentum and get some power to the people. This will also, this process, once we start to really escalate this, again, we're looking for that critical mass. This is going to move all of our projects. It's going to move, of course, to one of our main things, which is to get the people in control by being the administrators for the grand and the trial juries. So it'll also get things going with the committees of safety. People will become more involved and more active and see some opportunity on a local level to get more involved, get to know their sheriff and work with the sheriff and start to take control of their government from the grassroots level. This is what we have to do. So we have three very important programs that we're pushing very hard on. And, one is the judicial, one is political, and one is educational, ultimately for the sheriffs, to get the sheriffs going. So we'll make an announcement if we're going to go forward with looking to do an indictment on a Lavoie Finnegan case. And hopefully we'll, if we make that decision, we'll get the word out in the next couple of days, I would think. All right. Are there any other announcements? Nothing else, Jan? That's it?
Yes, I see that Brent is here. I had a question for him specifically. Let's see if
all right,
I can
well, he's
find
in
it.
As a host. He can unmute himself. Brent, *6, unmute yourself.
I can unmute him.
And anybody wants to get into the queue, well, looks like he is unmuted. No. Or is
he's
he?
Muted on mine, but...
Is he? Okay. *6 for anybody who wants to get into the queue. But you wanted to ask Brent something?
Yeah, it looks like he has to unmute himself. I can't seem to unmute him. There, Brent? He must have control.
Yeah.
Oh, there he
there
is.
There he is. He just unmuted.
Yeah, here.
Okay,
yeah.
This was a question that was submitted earlier for specifically for you. It says, earlier this year, Brent said that judges have the right to hold people in contempt of court. I take exception to this statement. It clearly states in the Fifth Amendment to the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution, quote, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, end quote. Da, da, da. If in common law, no man rules over another, how can a judge deprive you of your liberty and property without having a jury trial? I believe that it is up to the jury to order a contempt charge against the individual in question and not a judge. Any comment on that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen it, and I suppose you can go to YouTube and see it, too, where a man or a woman or somebody turns violent, tried to hurt somebody in the courtroom. And the court, the judge himself, is responsible for the order in the court, that nobody gets hurt. And he has bailiffs in a state court and U.S. Marshals in a federal court. And they generally do what he tells them to do. But in most cases, if something like that happened, he doesn't tell them to do anything. They have standing orders. Keep order in the court. I was in court not long ago, and a dispute occurred in the courtroom in which I was involved. The judge wasn't in the room. He left us in the courtroom to sort something out, and things got pretty heated and confrontational, I guess, is the way to say it. And the next thing I know, the bailiff was saying that you better tone this down a little bit. Well, he went back and got the judge, and the judge came out later and said, I don't have any fist fights in my courtroom, which I suppose would have meant take him outside. I don't know what he meant. And then we went to eat, and we came back, and the doors were locked to the courtroom. And I asked the bailiff later if he locked them, and he said, yes, he did. I said, did the judge tell you to do that? He said, no, I just figured it was a smart thing to do because there were documents in there over which people were fighting, and we didn't want anybody to steal them. What I mean to say about all that is, court is battle by trial, and it's our answer to trial by battle. It's our alternative to bloodshed, and that's why it's so important to us. And if there's going to be a fight in the courtroom, sometimes it does get out of hand. Tempers run high. And just like the referee in a boxing match, the referee in a boxing match has authority to separate men and do whatever he has to do to keep them killing one another or otherwise committing mayhem on one another, which does happen sometimes. Maybe some of you remember the Holyfield incident where the boxer bit the other fellow's ear off. That's been a number of years ago, but those kind of things happen. And a world champion, world heavyweight champion prize fight. Well, in court, it's the same way. And I don't know if the question is rhetorical or somebody's wanting to hear what I would say or whether they really believe that contempt of court's not part of our law, but contempt of court's been part of our common law as far back as I can trace it. And if this person that we're asking the question were put in charge of a courtroom and you didn't maintain order because you were the judge for whoever you were, then you aren't doing your job. I imagine you probably would try to maintain order. If a person is charged with contempt, they're entitled to a whole lot of things, including due process. Then the taking of a man's liberty or his property or his life isn't prohibited. That's why we have, for instance, this is a part of our due process, habeas corpus. If some judge holds someone in contempt and has them restrained, handcuffed, and jailed on the spot, whether locked in a room down the hall, as I've known has happened to some people, or taken to the jailhouse and locked up, or just held in custody outside the courtroom for a while, in all those instances, that prisoner has the right to habeas corpus hearing. That means the body must be brought before the court, and the jailer, whoever that might be, has to answer as to whether there's a lawful reason to be holding him in under arrest or in prison. And if it's judged by the court that it's not lawful, then he has to be released on the spot. No sending him back to jail, no processing out. Habeas corpus says you have to be released on the spot in front of the judge. So there is due process with contempt of court. And if anybody is ever jailed for contempt, they have a right to habeas corpus as quick as they can get the petition or somebody else can get the petition to the judge. And, of course, habeas corpus is not to be suspended. And that's in the federal jurisdiction in our federal courts according to our Constitution. And that's according to our common law, by the way. Habeas corpus is a common law remedy, like all of the good things of our tradition. Anyway, that'd be my answer, and we could cite plenty of examples. I think I'd cite an example. I'd read about a Supreme Court Justice of the United States who was sitting in a case in federal court in California. He was from California back in about 1870. His name was Stephen Field. And in the courtroom, the former Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court, he might have been the first Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court, a man six and a half feet tall almost, big fella. He turned and punched the marshal in the face so hard it knocked his teeth out of the front of his face and knocked him out. And Justice Field then held him in contempt. Other marshals came and jailed him, handcuffed him and jailed him. Now, doesn't it seem reasonable that a judge would have the authority to do that when there's that kind of violence in the courtroom? If it was left up to the jurors, they wouldn't say anything. Most people are pretty timid. Most people in court are timid because they don't think they have any authority there. They won't do anything. They think the judge has authority. They don't think the jurors have authority, although they do, but they don't think that. And really, jurors don't have authority to do a lot of things the judge has authority to do. So if you take issue with it, all I can say is that's never been our law. And even the Bible supports that position. You don't talk back to the judge. That's what the Bible says. You shall not speak evil of the ruler, that is the magistrate, that means the judge. And you're to show respect in his presence. There's two kinds of contempt in our common law courts, and our courts are common law courts. Regardless of how far they stray from it, they still are, and the structures of our common law still pertain. But two kinds of contempt. Number one, there's civil or non-criminal contempt, we should call it. The number two is criminal contempt. Non-criminal contempt is usually something that's done outside the presence of the court, outside of the courtroom, outside of the presence of the judge. For example, in a family law case, an injunction is filed against a man or woman to stay away from the other one, not get within 50 feet, 100 feet, all that kind of stuff. If a person disobeys the injunction, then that's civil or criminal contempt. You can get jailed for it, but it's not a criminal matter. You still have habeas corpus if you're jailed, if you want to file it. But then there's criminal contempt. That's contempt in the presence of the court, in the presence of the judge. That's throwing something at the judge, spitting at the judge, cursing the judge, defying the judge. That's criminal. And, of course, in that case, as always, you may be jailed on the spot, but because you haven't been bailed yet, but due process applies. And number one, the number one due process form that would figure into that would be habeas corpus. That's some response if this person wants to counter what I've just said. I'd invite them to do that. And maybe if they're on the call now or next week, they can register their question or email or tell Jan or Ron or Gerard to ask this another question of me or make a comment or tell me why you don't believe that. I think that would be a good idea. And other people might have the same questions you're having. So it'd be good to discuss it. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, I'd like to make a little bit of a comment on this, some logic here particularly. And it seems to me in most cases it should be the sheriff's job who should protect the peace in the court, because after all, he's the peacekeeper there. He's the constitutional officer. And that bailiff should be working for the sheriff or the marshal. So they should be either a marshal or a deputy sheriff who could be called and should be called, I presume, a bailiff. You know, if you go and look it up in Black's Law, and I did, it is a deputy usually. It's from the sheriff, and he's got the power and the authority of a sheriff. And a U.S. marshal has the same power as the sheriff has in federal courts or federal land or buildings and so on. And so, yeah, if a violence breaks out, you would imagine that it would be the sheriff that should be jumping up and taking care of the business. Of course, if he didn't realize it or see it and the judge was to say something, of course, whatever that would happen there. I am concerned, though, a little bit, because judges do abuse this power. But it makes a lot of sense, you know, if you get a court order and you're ordered to do something, and at some point in time, I think they usually give you a couple of chances, but if you don't obey the court order, something has to be done. So I can appreciate that. But we do have to figure out the due process. Due process must be available. And more often than not, if someone is out of order, they're not violent, not pushing themselves onto the court, but is just out of order, I would think the proper thing is to remove that person from the courtroom would be the best solution for that. I know that it's disrespectful for what the person is doing and so on, but I don't know that a judge should be able to find someone in contempt of court and have them jailed for a couple of days because they were argumentative or whatever. I mean, I know I was in a courtroom on one occasion where the judge told me, if you keep on going, I'm going to get you for contempt. But I was arguing a point. I was arguing a real valid point. It was a constitutional point. And when I told the judge, I says, well, you know, you disagree with the United States Supreme Court. And he says, no, I'm not. I'm not disagreeing with them. And that's when he got a little angry. And, you know, I knew I had to settle down. But, again, you know, it's a shame because even our habeas corpuses aren't being considered by these judges. They just have no respect for the law. But these judges are all lawless to begin with. Hopefully a lot of these indictments that are coming down, hopefully a lot of them are judges, and a lot of them are going to be disappearing from the bench, hopefully. And maybe that'll shake the judiciary up enough to start being obedient unto the law, where we, the people, can start to trust their decisions and have a more appreciation for what it is that they're doing. Right now, I have contempt for them. in every single case. I got a couple of cases going right now, one in the federal, one in the state court. And in both cases, well, state court's going pretty well, but in the federal court, well, I feel that he's already been bringing contempt to me, you know. And I'd like to put him in jail for a while. But, of course, I don't have that power or authority. So it is a difficult question, and it is a problem. It is a problem because judges abuse their powers. Hopefully we'll straighten it out and be able to think this out a little more better as time goes on. Anyway, anything else before we move along?
Well, Ollie has some comments. He's first up in the queue if you want to just
All right, well,
him.
Before we go to that, Gerard, are you here?
He was.
All right, well, let's take Ollie in. If he's Ollie, if Ollie has a report, let's take him on. If he just has a question or a comment, let me finish up with Brent, and then we'll go over to Ollie. But go ahead, Ollie.
Yeah, John, just a short comment. You talked about giving putting indictment in the Roy Fennecum case. You know, Jeanette, after they assassinated the boy, she had to learn a lot of things, how to run a front loader, feed the stock, and this and that. Her and her lawyer were fighting the BLM all for a year trying to get grazing rights back. They finally got them back in the late summer. Well, anybody knows that when a cow needs fresh green grasses in the springtime during calving time. I had a brief exchange with her today on Facebook. That once again, you know, that the all the other kids get to hug their dads. Their dads are home for Christmas. Jeanette and her kids are out in the cold again. They have to go through the holidays and do all the work and with their, and their dad not there. So I if she needs help, and I encourage you very much. Let's get something going, an indictment, whatever, in the Fennecum case. I rest.
Well, I agree with you. I'd like to see an indictment go through. I think the timing is right. I think this might be something that'll help really push our agenda forward, which needs to be pushed forward. And so the timing may be good. Getting a copy of that indictment out to the president and to Jeff Sessions, and again demanding U.S. attorneys in order to prosecute this case, as we have with the other cases, could be something really good if we can get that that movement there. But we'll see what happens. I do want to bring it up to the leadership, and let's see where they go with it, and then we'll go forward. But everyone should be out there on our webpage, what do we call that page? Underneath the grand jury, the docket, all the way down. I think it's all the way down at the bottom of the page on the docket page. You'll find a zip download. I think it's a one zip download, but it could be a couple. And it has all the evidence in there concerning the assassination. So everyone needs to really review that evidence and be very astute in what really took place there before they could cast a vote for an indictment or not. Okay, with that, Gerard, are you here? Mr. Gerard.
Well, he's still here, but he's muted.
Oh, maybe he's talking to himself. He has that habit. Gerard? Let me see if I can unmute him.
I can't. Maybe you can.
No.
He must have his finger on a button there and fall asleep.
Well, anyway, hopefully he'll pick up on this. All right, let's move over to Brent, and hopefully Gerard will pick up on the board here when Brent's done. Okay, we got Brent Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thanks, John. We're in the Declaration. 76, moving through it, President, to see if we were moving forward. Paragraph 17. Comments about it. It's organized very well,
Fred,
and the organization.
Fred, you're breaking up pretty bad. Are you coming in on cell tonight?
Yeah.
Maybe you can move to a different place in the room.
Yeah. I think I got this down to science. I know where to put it here if it doesn't act
okay.
Right at a certain time.
Because you're sounding good now.
Yeah. Well, I moved it about 3 foot up into the window. At any rate, this is the way it is out here. Paragraph 17 says this, that they're upset with King George, who, as I continue to stress, was not king in the colonies. He was emperor, or so he said. People didn't like that either. But he said, for protecting them, speaking of the soldiers, the British soldiers, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. Murders committed by soldiers of the people that they were killing, they were the protectors of. They were supposed to be protecting these people, they said, and they were killing them. Now think just for a minute. Is this old stuff, or does it have any application? Who killed the boy Finnegan? Wasn't it the people that claimed they were supposed to be protecting everybody? But instead, they murdered the boy. They murdered him without cause. Now, back when the British soldiers were doing that kind of thing, they held trial. They tried him. But it says there was a mock trial, M-O-C-K. I haven't heard anybody even talk about anybody getting at a hint close of trying the people that murdered Lavoie Finnegan for murder. But clearly, he was shot, and there's a question about whether the shooting of Lavoie Finnegan was lawful. Well, this is a problem that we have wherever there's government gives guns to men and tells them they're important. You give a man a gun, he likes the slap of the leather, he thinks he's something, he's got power, he's looking for somebody to shoot. You say, well, not all cops are that way. Well, maybe not. But there are enough of them that way that it makes a fellow wonder whether they should even be issued weapons. And there have been people that have written articles to that effect recently. I've read them on the internet. People, I respect their scholarship and opinion, and they're asking whether the government ought to be armed in the United States. Or ought they be like the bobbies in London, just carry nightsticks? You begin to wonder. Because if we don't have guns, and they do, they're going to be killing us for long. Well, they already are. And they're afraid it'll be the other way around. But if you don't see the irony of the situation where people with guns tell people that don't have guns that they're going to enforce this idea of them not having guns. Well, you've not got your eyes open. It just comes down to a matter of force, who has the guns and who doesn't. And the government wants a monopoly on guns and force and violence. And they want that monopoly so they could do to people what they otherwise couldn't do if people had guns. That's the brutal fact of the matter. That's why in most of the world, people are not allowed to have guns, and the government is in a habit of murdering them whenever they think it's convenient or they can get away with it. Well, that was the problem in the colonies. You see, their problem was about like our problem. We're watching what police officers are doing to people, and when I say these kind of things, I always get a lot of comments about there are good cops out there. It's like when I used to say a government has no business trying to educate children, and then I get the comments, well, there are some good teachers out there. Well, there's good preachers out there. There are good teachers. There are good congressmen. There are a lot of good people out there doing all sorts of things. But it remains nonetheless true. When you give a person power, the temptation to use it will eventually exacerbate something inside them that we wish we weren't exacerbating, namely the imperfection of ambition and greed and domination that resides in every person. That's why it's important we not ruin those that work for us in government. And we can do it by paying them too much mind, too much attention, and giving them too much power. Because they learn, as Jesus Christ said to the Pharisees, they learn to love it. Before long, they're fleecing people, finding ways to skin them. It's the nature of man. That's why it's important that common law, that government be divided, and the power be divided. We have separation of powers, juries, and distribution. Through our common law, wealth will be distributed, whether we like it or not, without government doing anything. But soldiers, that's the complaint here, soldiers, people that work for the government, soldiers are representative of all those people who work for the government that have guns, and there are more of them all the time. I think I mentioned last time that I remember not too many decades ago, BLM officers weren't allowed to carry guns. I remember it very well. I remember being around them, and then I remember when all that changed. And they were given the permit to carry pistols. But now we have BLM agents with flak jackets and rifles, automatic, and they look like they're set up to carry on a commando raid behind enemy lines. That's not good for public relations. Not at all. And you even go in the courtrooms today and the bailiffs are dressed like they're ready to go on a commando raid behind enemy lines. They don't wear ties and slacks, they wear fatigues and boots, bloused up. It's not good for public relations, and it's not good for the government. It's not good for people for that kind of a picture to be given in the courtroom. It makes it look like the courtroom's under the control of commandos. I suppose that's what they want, but soldiers, as we've often said, are rightly under martial law. And freedom demands that their murdering of non-military men and women subject them to our common law courts with the jury and not be subjected to military law. If they're going to venture outside of the military context and hurt people, well, then they must be subject to our courts, not the military courts. Otherwise, government will use its soldiers to eliminate opposition. They'll use their soldiers to crush opposition. LaVoy Finnegan, why was he murdered? Because the government had guns, they had a monopoly of force and power, and they used that monopoly to crush the man that challenged their power. And he didn't challenge it with a gun, by the way. He challenged it with words. He didn't draw a gun on anybody. But doesn't that say something about the power of words? Guns are a last resort. Where does the real battle occur? Well, in a representative fashion, it occurs in the courtroom where we hurl oaths at one another and testimonies. That's what scares the bejeebies out of the evil empire. That's why the evil empire works so hard in the courts. We were talking about that a while ago. It's always a problem. But King and Parliament, in this case, back when the Declaration was written, ordered that any British officer or soldier accused of violence be sent to another colony or to England where they would get a sweetheart trial. Now, our Constitution of the United States, for that reason, says that people accused of crimes are to be tried in the district where they, as the prisoners say today, where they caught their case, and that district had to have been, according to our Constitution of the United States, prescribed. In other words, not drawn after the fact of the supposed crime that was committed, But before the fact, we call them federal districts. And we have federal district courts. That's according to our Constitution. So that you will be tried where the crime was said to have been committed. But that's not what was going on here. These soldiers that were accused of murder were sent to England or to another colony where they would get a mock trial. And this is the history of England and the history of our common law. And the history of England comes down to one thing, a battle of the jurisdiction of the courts of the law of the city. That's what a martial law court is. That's what an admiralty law court is. That's what an administrative law court is. And that's what a canon law court is. That's the church courts. All of those are courts of martial jurisdiction, canon law, the Code of Justinian, the old law, as it were, of the Roman legions that has come down to us. And way back there in England, and it's in the long history of our common law, going back before Magna Carta, especially after Rome gained power, it was the fight between the jurisdiction of the courts of Rome, the church courts in England, and the common law courts. And by analogy to what was going on here with soldiers, priests in England accused of murder were tried in the church courts, where they never were convicted. And the church claimed exclusive jurisdiction over their priests to do that. We see the same problem worldwide today with the pedophile rapes. The Archbishop of Australia, recently the evidence compiled against him, he'd been running pedophile rings in Australia, Roman Archbishop, I should say, for decades. And all of a sudden the Pope of Rome says, well, I need you in Rome. Why? Well, you're a financial whiz, and I think you can straighten up the Vatican's financial problems. So he brought him to Rome before they could indict him. And of course, the Vatican, being recognized as a separate sovereign state, he's safe there. And he deserves, maybe, who knows, after he was tried, if he's a pedophile and ran many pedophile rings, he deserves to suffer a pretty stiff penalty, maybe death. But again, it's the same problem, you see. What's going on today with the church courts? What was going on in the colonies with the admiralty and martial law courts? And it's still going on in other places today, where those that commit crimes that work for government, like the state policeman that murdered Lavoie Finnegan, they claim sovereign jurisdiction. Sovereign jurisdiction. You can't try us at all. Well, that's not true. Sovereign jurisdiction only applies if the government employee that's accused acted within the scope of his employment. And murdering people is not within the scope of anybody's employment. Unless they're trying to murder you, of course. That's a different thing. There are cases where people try to murder judges on the bench, and the judges pulled out pistols and shot them. Well, I suppose that's self-defense. Well, King and Parliament were keeping all such murderers, that is, the soldiers, the British soldiers, from the common law courts, and they were keeping them in the martial law courts, which ensured their acquittal. And common law courts require its courts to have final jurisdiction over the affairs of military courts, civil law tribunals. That's a common law. Martial law, admiralty law, canon law, and administrative law. All of those are the four major kinds of law of the city tribunals present, by the way, in our own world, in our own country, three of them. We say we don't have church courts here anymore, and we don't, but in England, in a common law country, England's a common law country, they still have the ecclesiastical jurisdiction because the Church of England is the state church, headed up by the Queen herself now that she sits on the throne. She's the Pope, as it were, in England, the Church of the Anglican Church, and the Anglican Church has courts. And those courts are equity courts, and they call them sometimes family law courts. But I've been told, although I don't follow it close, in England that has been changed some in the last 10 years. But it's still part of their law. But hence in America, appeals from military courts, for example, martial law courts, admiralty courts, courts of the Navy, the Army, appeals from those courts are to the common law federal courts, the federal district courts. And further, common law requires soldiers to be tried in the common law's non-military courts for felonies done against non-military people. But that wasn't happening in the colonies, and that was one of the reasons for our separation from Britain. Soldiers and sailors are all subject to the same rule of law and accorded the same rights of trial by jury as non-military men and women. However, King George tried his soldiers and officials in his civil law tribunals, admiralty tribunals too, before judges depended upon him for their jobs and their pay. And he held his kept men above the law, and they were nothing more than kept men. In the United States, soldiers and sailors are tried as all others in the common law court of the state having jurisdiction over felonies done within those states. One of the things that is the hallmark of our common law, and the hallmark of our common law country, especially America, is that we keep the military powers, in theory anyway, subject to the non-military powers. That is why the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States is not a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. He does not don military dress. Never has in the history of our country. The Commander-in-Chief, the President, has never worn a uniform. Now, in England, they have trouble with that, and their Crown members sometimes wear military uniforms. We said we don't want any more of that. That's dangerous. Our military powers must be subject to our non-military powers. And Harry Truman made much of that. And he didn't believe that Ike should be president because Ike had spent his life as a soldier. And Harry didn't think that was a good idea. Well, Harry had something to say about that. I think he's probably right on that point. It certainly is dangerous. Now, Ike turned out okay. There is a legislation in place now, and we saw it happen with the Trump administration, where that mad dog, what was his name? He was in the Marine Corps all his life. People seem to like him quite a bit.
Mattis?
Yeah, that's him, Mad Dog Mattis. They had to wait for him to retire, waiting a certain number of days before he could be appointed to office, because it wasn't enough that he was out of the military. He had to be out for a certain period of time. But then I was thinking to myself, too, a military officer of the United States is never retired. He's always on call, and he can be called back into service at any time according to the needs of the country. That's kind of the unwritten rule. But still, Ike turned out okay. And we all, at the time, I remember, I was a little boy, but everybody liked Ike. Of course, they couldn't help it. So many men had served under him, and he headed up the military establishment that won the largest war we'd ever fought. But still, we need to keep in mind that our military forces are to be subject to non-military powers. Well, have I talked for 20 minutes? No, not quite yet, so I'll read just a little more. Let's go to paragraph 18. This says, our declaration says, that they were upset with England for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. It's hard to imagine, isn't it, that Americans weren't allowed to trade with any part of the world, especially with all of the coastline they had. There could have been ships coming in from everywhere. The government might not know about it, but at that time, the British Navy was the most powerful navy on the faces of our planet, and it got more powerful later. The British Navy was as old as King Alfred the Great. The 9th century, he's called the father of the British Navy, and he put naval forces in place because of the Viking invasions. The Danes were invading the island, and they eventually whooped the island and sat on the throne for a while, and thousands upon thousands of Danes came to Britain and ended up staying and mixing their blood with everybody else that was there. But that's how long the Navy had been around, and By the time of the Declaration of 76, the British Navy was powerful. And why were they powerful? Well, because they were the strong arm for the Bank of London. That's why. Just like the military forces of the United States now, in many ways, are the strong arm for the Federal Reserve Bank all over the world. And if a fellow can't see that, he's not opening his eyes. Well, that was going on back during the time of our Declaration of 76. And the British Navy guarded on the high seas the trading arm of the Bank of London. And there were, at any given time, any given moment, 24 hours a day, over 2,500 merchant ships of the British East India Company on the high seas. That doesn't mean in port. On the high seas. That's a lot of ships. And it took a powerful navy to keep them all guarded. And that's what the British Navy did, and they did that, a strong arm for the Bank of London. You say, well, I can't read that in the history books, Brent. Well, no, you're not going to read it in the history books. It takes a lot of digging to find those kind of things out, but if you read enough, pretty soon it just comes clear to you. It begins to come out of the calculus of all the things you've looked at. And then you find a person here or there that admits it, says it. Well, that's what was going on. And the American colonies had their trade cut off with all parts of the world except they could trade with the British East India Company. But that's the only people they were allowed to trade with. Mercantilism, they called it. And that is the reason for the rise of the UCC and the Uniform Commercial Code. It all had to do with the British East India Company. And its great competition was the Dutch East India Company. That also had about 2,500 ships on the high seas at any point, 24 hours a day. And their navy was powerful too, but not as powerful as the British Navy. But the Brits said, the United States is a colony. We have our colonies because the colonies provide us with natural resources. We don't have any great trove of natural resources here on this island anymore. We need the colonies, and we need them to trade with us, not trade with other people. And so that's what they demanded, and that's why, of course, one of the reasons why the colonies went to war. You see, it all came down at every point to a denial of our common law. They wanted a monopoly, monopoly. Mono means one. Monopoly means that one group has an absolute lock on a particular thing to make money. And the Bank of London had an absolute lock on trade with the colonies, a monopoly. And that's against our common law. Our common law does not tolerate monopolies. In fact, Lord Coke, Justice Coke, the fellow I mentioned a while ago, I thought I mentioned him, and he's the one that said that monopolies are against the liberty of the individual, and they're against the common law, and our common law is against monopolies. And he shows that throughout the history of our common law. Monopoly, I'm going to quote him here. I thought I'd quoted him, but I hadn't. I just looked at it. Here it is. Monopolies of trade, said Justice Coke, being unnatural, are against the common law, and therefore dominate only by unlawful government force command. What he's saying is this. No monopoly can exist without government force backing it up. It's impossible. The Federal Reserve Bank has a monopoly on the issuance of money in the United States. That's against our common law. That's enforced, by the way, enforced by force of government. The Postal Service of the United States has a monopoly in the United States by law on carrying letters. And it's enforced by force. You try to open a business carrying letters for pay, you'll get arrested, and they'll try you and maybe send you to the federal penitentiary. Because all monopolies are enforced by force. By the way, that's an unconstitutional monopoly the United States government has on letter carrying. Of course, they do it so they can keep track of, if they want, of who you're communicating with. And they have their post offices in every little town. And you say, well, but the Constitution, doesn't the Constitution say that the federal government has to provide post offices and post roads? And the answer is yes, but it doesn't say it gets a monopoly on carrying letters. That's a monopoly, and it's against the liberty of the individual because it's against the common law. Well, one more comment here and one more paragraph, and then we'll quit. This is a big one. Paragraph 19. We have a bone to pick with George III. Why? I'll read it to you. For imposing taxes on us without our consent. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Imposing taxes on us without our consent. What did they view as consent? Well, they wanted representation. No taxation without representation. Do you really think that you provide any consent to government to tax you through your representatives? If you do, you're not in touch with reality. I didn't give consent to anybody in government to do the things they're doing to me, some of the nasty things they've tried to do, some of the things they threaten to do. There's a lot of things they do. I didn't give consent, and the theory is that I gave consent through my representative. My representative doesn't know who I am. He never calls me. Well, then, if that's not true, it isn't, effectively. Matter of fact, our founder said, if a representative represents over 30,000 people, then the people are denied representation by the very fact of the magnitude of the numbers. 30,000 was the limit, they said. How many persons does a U.S. congressman represent now? 20 years ago, it was, I used to know the exact number because I ran for Congress. It was over 600,000. I think it was 619. But now it's over 700,000. It's a joke. An absolute joke. And because it is the way it is, because we have locked in, and we have, we've locked in the number of congressmen we can have. That didn't happen until about 100 years ago. We were increasing our number of congressmen as the population increased. Of course, if we were to a limit, you could do the math on it, figure it out. We'd have a lot of congressmen if we ensured that they only represented 30,000 or less. Maybe too many to make it work. But that just goes to show you that any element in our government that has to do with majority rule, and the legislatures of our country are majority institutions, ultimately they won't work. Ultimately, they'll become meaningless. And the only thing that will retain meaning in government is the common law jury of 12. It will always retain meaning because justice is only delivered instance by instance in the courts to individuals. There is no such thing as group justice. There's no such thing as majority representation. That's all a fantasy. It's all a lie. It's a ruse. It doesn't happen. Where there's majority rule, the minority will be trampled upon. That's why we must have juries. They must know what they're doing. We must go into court more often, not less often. And we must, the grand jury is important also, and we must be more adamant about our rights in court than we are. Forget your representative and concentrate on the courts. Your duty is as a juror. That's where you have a vote, not a vote. That's where you have influence. No, our juries are not majority institutions. That's where you have influence that counts. One man at a time, one case at a time, one grievance at a time. Justice doesn't come to us any other way. Well, that's enough, John or Gerard or Jen, whoever's there, but thanks again for allowing me to come on. Let me say this before I quit. As we like to say, the things I say here are not necessarily the opinions of National Liberty Alliance, but that my opinions are my own, but I appreciate the opportunity they give me to come and say a few words. I really do, and I enjoy it very much. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate that. Okay, I guess we'll take our first person here. Before we do that, Gerard, are you back yet? Hello, Gerard. You're muted if you're talking. All right, anyway, if you can hear me when you're ready, you can take control of the board. Until then, I'll run it. All right, we'll take our first caller, and again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue. First caller looks like California Fred. Go right ahead.
Hello, John. This is Fred, California Fred. I had a question for Mr. Winters. If he's
I believe he's still here. Yep, he's still here. Go ahead.
This is kind of a sneaky one.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I was thinking that since Nisi Prius courts do not have the right to fine or imprison, why can't we do a restraining order on all gold flag municipalities?
Well,
and let that stand as your, otherwise there's war, like you said, bring back dueling. I mean, that's a pretty good shot.
What, you're saying you'd like to file for an injunction against flying a flag?
Yeah, against state courts and city courts, not state courts, I'm sorry, town courts, village courts, city courts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, here in New York, all the state courts, of course, you know, which we call the Supreme Court, and the county courts are courts of record. So they have the power to fine and incarcerate.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the courts that are town courts, village courts, I mean, these guys, they just make everything. Well, they all make them up anyway. All these courts make whatever they want to do, they do. But even worse, on the town courts, they put you in jail for code violations. And by the way, I like the idea of these cops going around without guns. They shouldn't have weapons because they're code enforcers. They should be out there with giving tickets and moving on if they think they can give them. I don't know how they can lawfully give them to begin with. So, but anyway.
No, I don't either. And I remember the pictures of the old stone kind of cops carried nightsticks, place it looked like the movies, place of like New York City. That's all they carried, nightsticks. I mean, a nightstick can do a lot of damage. You don't have a gun. But
it didn't the cops on the Charlie Chaplin, I don't know that I saw that they had any guns.
Yeah.
Like, what was that?
It seems like I remember it that way. Cops and guns in America didn't really happen until at least the 1840s. Before that time, Americans didn't trust cops with guns, and for good reason. And as long as Americans were armed, they didn't worry about it. I don't want to ignore Fred's question, but I would ask this, and the category become weird, but would Fred, if you're still there, justice of the peace, finance body?
You're breaking up again, Brent. I don't know, maybe move over to the left.
I know, here we are. Try that. I said, just that throw the question out, Fred, or whoever wants to respond, would you be against the justice of the peace, fining somebody for the violation of some infraction of some local code?
What I'm against are these cops that come out and they come up to your car. They don't have a Fourth Amendment warrant for your arrest. They're not ever going to get one. They hassle and intimidate people. They violate your constitutional rights 6 ways to Sunday. My only question here is, can you put them on a peace bond to keep them the hell out of your hair? That's what I'm getting at.
Because yeah, no, I know. You know that.
If you put them on judicial notice that their gold flag jurisdiction doesn't apply to you because it's harassment without due process, and they are on notice that there will be war. I mean, you know, let's get down to simple facts. You say a courtroom is a battleground. It's designed to talk it out instead of shoot it out.
Well, a boxing ring is a battleground too, but we don't allow people to bring guns into the boxing ring and just do anything they want. We must fight. If we're going to box, we must fight according to the Queensbury rules.
Shall not be infringed is the law, and I believe we should enforce it. Now, these cops in California think that only they can have guns, unless you go through some kind of permission slip process.
Yeah, that's California. That's true.
Yeah, well, you know, the Constitution doesn't end at the border of California. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, well, I'm fully aware of that. What are you going to do about it? You're in California. You have two choices. They tell me that people are exiting California by the thousands.
Well, yeah.
The hundreds of thousands.
Well, what am I going to do about it? That's why I'm asking you this question. Can you put a restraining order on law enforcement? Can you use the common law and due process of law to put them in check? Give them legal.
Well, sure. You can petition the court for such a thing if you want to. If you could find a lawyer to do it, that'd be good. Chances of that probably be pretty slim.
Well,
but
now there was.
You can petition the government.
You
have the
probably,
right to petition.
You probably wouldn't get a judge to give you that restraining order.
You don't need a judge to do it. Judges are the problem.
Well, of course, but still, you have to go somewhere to get that restraining order. You have to go to some authority, and you
would
assume
that
that's where you would get it
in the governor's
as a
office.
Court of record, huh?
The Secretary of State in the governor's office, because now you're talking about some form of treaty with the state.
Well, look, I think we're going to. There's only one way we're going to solve this problem and many, 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 many other problems, and that's when the people take total control. They decide to become educated. They take control of their future and their destiny by, making sure that they become jurists when they're called, making sure that we have an administration of the people and by the people, not controlled by any political powers or authorities. And making sure that these juries are untainted, and also people joining the committees of safety and becoming committeemen, taking control of the political process, and making sure that nobody that has not taken a good, decent constitutional course gets in to office. If they don't know the Constitution, if I was the committeeman, which I am, but, they don't recognize me, but in any event, if we were running a committee and I was a committee man and we were deciding whether this guy is going to carry his papers to run for office, I'm going to be asking him some constitutional questions. And
okay,
if he can't answer them, I'm going to tell him, back when you know him. But I'm just trying to tell you, that's when we're going to be able to deal with this problem, because we'll shut those courts down because they're all unconstitutional.
Right, John, that's what I'm getting at. You said take it to a judge, blah, blah, blah. Well, where can you find a judge that doesn't have a flag with a gold stripe around it?
Oh, yeah, I know. You got that. Exactly. But, we will solve this problem when the people take control on the grassroots level, when every county has their own administration process for the juries, and every county is starting to work, bringing the committee, becoming the committee men and taking control on a grassroots level, not allowing a top-down structure control over the committee men, taking back that whole process, and then putting these people in order. Look at the grand jury could even let them know, the judge, hey, when these people come in, you better tell them that they have the option of going along with this or leaving your courtroom. And who's going to stay in their courtroom when they have the option, okay? Because if not, they're going to be held liable. And also, sheriffs have no authority, no right, and we wrote this in the book, okay, in the handbook, okay? Sheriffs cannot take a prisoner that has not been given due process. And due process must be given in a court of law, not a kangaroo court, not a town court, not a village court, no, a court of law. And so if they're going to take a prisoner for a code violation that some town or village sent them in, well, they're all going to be running into trouble. And that's the other thing, is educating our sheriffs, because the sheriffs can stop it just by refusing to take the prisoners. We're not coming to take you. And also, look at that, if you go into these town courts, village courts, you'll see village police, you'll see town police, and in the cities, you'll see city police. But you will not see a sheriff or a deputy in those courts. You'll find those people who work with the bailiffs, they control the bailiffs, but those people in the state courts and the county courts, because that's the courts of law. That's where they are. And by the way, in New York State, there is one city court that is a court of record. It's mentioned in our Constitution, and that is New York City courts. So,
generally speaking,
city, town, and village and courts are not courts of record. They cannot fine. They cannot incarcerate.
John, I'll make another comment if I may. If I'm on, can you hear me, John?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, we're talking about who has power in the courtroom to hold in contempt and to do things. And I don't want to forget what happened at that trial up there in Oregon, where that lawyer was tased.
Yeah.
The judge didn't say anything, didn't give any orders. The marshals just did it on their own cognizance. Again, I point out, you give power to men, and eventually they'll misuse it. So I don't know that it's such a good thing to always just give power to bailiffs and marshals, because then they become nothing but glorified thugs. So there always needs to be control. Men that have power need to be disciplined to be under orders of some kind, under authority. And if they're not disciplined to that, and just give them the job to take care of things, I'd mentioned that a while ago, some of them, bailiffs, take their own cognizance, but usually in such cases they're understanding orders. They're not just doing anything they want. And so the power in the courtroom needs to be under wraps and under control and under authority, as all power has to be. And the only remedy for lawlessness, and that was a good example of lawlessness that happened to those lawyers, or that one lawyer, the only remedy for lawlessness is true law. Everybody is under authority somewhere, somehow, in every situation. And nobody has the right to do wrong. Nobody has the jurisdiction to do wrong. And anybody who's in a courtroom and sees violence get out of hand, if they're there, they have a duty to stop it, no matter who they are. If the judge doesn't do anything, if the bailiff doesn't do anything, it comes back to the common law rule that everybody is responsible to do right in every situation, and not just step out of the way. When nobody will do something, it may be incumbent upon you to do something. Back to you, John.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Fred? And by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, we only got a couple of people in the queue, star six. Fred?
Yeah. Yes, I'm here, sir. The thing is, we are governed by the consent of the governed. And what I was trying to get Brent to...
Yeah, but the problem is the governed hasn't taken up to make their consent known. That's the problem.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
If you do a peace bond, it's a formal request or demand through a court action to keep someone away from you.
Yeah, now, but what I'm trying to say is that problem wouldn't be there if the people were doing their job. Now, the people are ignorant and don't know what their job is. They don't understand that they should be involved on the levels that we're talking about. And we have to educate them and bring the message of liberty to them. They don't even know what liberty is, most people. And they can't define it, they can't explain it, they can't express it, and a lot of things that they submit to, they think they should be submitting to. That's how bad off we are here in America at this point in time.
Well,
we have to bring the message of Jefferson, you know, to become educated. And so, look, it is clear in my mind, and it's clear on what we've been teaching here, that the powers of the people is found one in the judiciary and the other in the political fields. And if you control both of those, you control everyone. Well, you control your whole government, okay? It's that simple. Control the jury boxes and control who we the people are going to allow to get into office. Now, it is true some people can bypass the committeemen and walk their own papers and get enough signatures to get in. But a lot of these people can't. Congressmen and senators, they can't do it. It's too big for them to do it. They need the help of the people. They need the committeemen to walk their papers and get the signatures. But I'm sorry, Mr. Congressman to be or Senator to be, if you don't understand what the Second Amendment or the Fifth Amendment and what the authority of the government is and isn't. Because if they don't understand that, they don't deserve the office. So they can go away and they can learn it and come back and we'll ask them again. And then when they get in office, they better obey it. And if they don't obey it and they start breaking the law, they're getting bad behavior, well, then the grand jury, if Congress isn't going to do something about controlling themselves and no one else is going to do it, the people will do it. We'll threaten them with an indictment. Grand jury could let them know, we're going to bring you up before the full board if you don't straighten up and stop breaking the law. But
that's why I brought up what I brought up.
Right.
Where do we find relief as people against these gold flag people that are just running around incarcerating without power to do so.
I would think that 99% of the people don't even understand what the gold fringe means.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Probably a lot more than that.
As soon as people wind up paying out of their pockets, the news travels quick. When they start going to jail, it goes quicker.
Right.
Anyway, I'll let somebody else hog the time. Thank you very much for trying to answer me.
Okay. All right, we'll go take Eric. Let's see. Our next caller is Eric. Go right ahead, Eric. You got the mic.
Yeah, I had a question about this thing that's in the... It's all the buzz right now. But, yeah, so if we can't, just real quick, if we can't in the court, if we can't trust the judge, and then we can't trust the marshals because they're abusing their power, if we do educate the juries and tell them what their power is, could then maybe the juries give orders to the bailiffs or the marshals about how to keep the order, understanding that the magistrate is to do that, but isn't there a way to...
It is the job of any individual. If a sheriff is there, bailiff is the sheriff, and someone is getting violent and out of control, and they don't do something about it, which I can't imagine that happening anyway, but if they were, okay, you know, it's any person in that courtroom has the right to call out to the bailiff or the sheriff and say, you know, why aren't you doing your job? But there's also... you know, which could be quite dangerous to make a citizen's arrest in a courtroom would be quite dangerous, I would imagine, if nobody's going to do anything. But look, I think it's reasonable that, you know, I agree with the person asking the question. There's a lot of courts that are abusing their powers and giving people, you know, getting them on contempt when they have no power or authority to do that in many situations. Maybe someone is being disrespectful. Well, then something needs to be done. They could be removed from the courtroom. They don't necessarily have to go to jail. But, that's one way to deal with that. Violence, no doubt about it. They should be arrested immediately. And beyond that, I don't know. I mean, what other criteria would there be that a person would have to, be found in contempt or removed other than not obeying the court order? You know, you have to obey a court order. When you've given the authority, that authority to that judge, if you're in a civil suit and you've given and you didn't ask for a trial by jury, and you've given that judge the authority, when the time comes to execute certain things and getting information, and you're ordered to give that information and you don't give it, you know, hey, the authority has already been given to the judge by the people involved. So in that sense, you know, the people have given the authority. But let's go back to the problem, getting beyond this problem, and that is control of our government. We control our government by controlling our courts, and we control our government by controlling who gets into government. That's the committee man's job. That's the political process. And on the judicial process, it's the grand jury and the trial jury. None of these prosecutors, it has become so clear the last 10 or so years of my life, since I've been in the courts, it's become so clear that prosecutors should not have the power that they have. They don't have the authority to do the things that they do. I've seen these guys come get their indictments, and by the time a year goes by, anything these people were indicted on has changed to something else. They got rid of this and put in that. They pile things on. They try to make deals. They frighten people. You're going to go to jail for 20 years unless you plead guilty now. We can give you two. You know, all of this stuff, it's all evil, and they do it day in and day out. How often do you see a judge indicted? How often do you see a prosecutor indicted? And believe me, these people are evil. They belong. Most of them belong in jail. I haven't met many that don't belong in jail, as far as from my perspective. So how come they're not in jail? Because they're in charge. They have total control of the whole process. And, of course, their strings are pulled. You know, the pressure is put on them to do the right thing for the elite, you know, to keep the status quo, you know, and make sure that the government always wins, you know. It's a mess, and only the people can fix it. And, again, I just want to take this opportunity to make one other point. You know, if people think that Trump can solve the problem and we the people can go back to sleep, I got a bridge in Brooklyn for sale.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and we have to, it just seems obvious that if we do accomplish our goal here, our goals at NLA, then everything else will fall into place and there won't be this silly abuse of power in the courts. You know, Brent's talking about the Queensberry rules and the boxing ring, and you have simple rules for a courtroom too. I mean, even Robert's rules, I mean, it would just be real basic stuff, and there would be order, and as long as people had respect for one another, all this stuff would kind of fall away and decency would be restored. But let me get on to something else here. This Robert David Steele fellow you have on one of your videos, he kind of makes my BS meter go off. I appreciate he says some good things, but he seems to have ideas that appear to be good ideas. He wants Trump to listen to him, but I tell you what, if he only knew about the NLA, we have the answers to all the things he wants to do. And we know those answers.
I agree with that. You're right on that. Some of his ideas and things, and again, he's looking for solutions. He's figuring it out himself. He probably doesn't know, you know, he probably knows minimum about the law and the way things actually work. And so some of the ideas are not good. There's no doubt about it. Even Trump has some error or flaws in his thinking. And I'm sure I do too, you know. But we got to discover them, you know. But we'll figure them out and fix them. But look, the key thing is this, is now is the time for the people to make a move. And I'm going to do everything I can to try to get this critical mass moving. I think we have a lot of things that have given us a potential to do it. But I'll tell you what, it's going to take the people who are part of NLA to actually get up and do something now, to ring the bell, to sound the alarm, to get the people out to the sheriff's site, to get the people involved and to step up and let's get a potential indictment going on these people who killed Lavoie Finnegan. Now is the time to move that. We also have a 9/11 one. Well, maybe we should be moving on that too. And we have all that information also on our website, on our docket page. People just need to go up there and start reviewing all the evidence, and then come in and let's talk about it and make a decision. But if people think that Trump's going to get in there and fix the problems and that we don't have to do nothing anymore, we can remain ignorant and go back to sleep and do whatever it is we think we want to do, forget it. It's not going to happen. We're going to lose it all again. Look, even with good-intentioned people, still going to lose it if the people don't understand the Constitution. If we, the people, don't require a constitutional knowledge by the people who we have elected into these offices, if we don't require that, a fluency and understanding of the Constitution, then we deserve what we get.
Absolutely. And we got to do that with education of our children. Obviously, we got to get the education system back to us. All right, but look at...
That is another plan of ours to really work. Look at, once we move through this, through the nation, get enough people involved, and we got the committees of safety going, morphing into the committee men, and we've got the administrations building up in all of the counties, then we've got really a presence everywhere where we can start to push our local schools to bring in a good education on civics and on the Constitution. Every child should know. There's no reason any of these children should go to school any more than 8 or 9 years, period, and should easily have into a college-level education by the time they get through the 8th or 9th grade. That's a no-brainer. I've seen it already. You know, in private schools, I can see what private schools do. These kids come out far, far advanced than any high school and public school. Forget about it. There's nothing. It doesn't even come near it, you know. And so they don't need any more than 9 grades to begin with. Anything more than that, really, it's getting an indoctrination to begin with. That's why they have them there. They want to keep them there until they become an adult, so that they bring them right from childhood to adult, so they're obedient to the powers that be, and destroy their morals and so on and so forth. But each one, every child coming out of school should have enough knowledge to be able to walk into any courtroom, open up a case, and defend themselves. Now, some people aren't as articulate as others. Some people maybe can't express themselves in different ways than others, maybe on paper or whatever. And counsel is available. That's fine. But generally speaking, we should give to our children all the tools necessary that they can have to be able to be masters of their own life. And going into a courtroom is part of that whole thing. You know, it's such a closed game in there. You know, I could see how I upset the court every time I walk in it. And just by the fact the way they act, the things they do, the stupidity, and they're so dumb. I can't believe these educated people are just so dumb. It's pathetic, you know. But in any event, you know, I blow out their whole deal because they can't make their backroom deals. The judge only has so much power over you. It's not like he can threaten to take your license away, you know. And so it upsets their whole game in there. They don't like it. Well, to hell with them if they don't like it. Big deal. You know, we need to get more people in the courts, and we just got to get rid of this attitude.
All right. Well, look, at my question is about coin and currency and Bitcoin, this whole cryptocurrency thing. But I just want to make a note about the shooters of Lavoie Finicum. Were they state police, or were they hired perhaps by one of these military contractors, such again as Eric Prince? And you know, Brent brought up the British East Indies company tonight, and I saw an article recently about this Prince fella, and he took a proposal to our government and said, hey, we can strip Afghanistan of all their minerals. And he said, supposedly in this proposal, he says he's basing it on exactly the Dutch or the British East India Company's plan for the way they did business. So anyway, I thought that was a neat coincidence. I really don't trust that fella at all. But anyway, my question is this: Bitcoin.
I think as far as the shooters, I strongly suspect they were contractors. Possibly foreign contractors, but I suspect they were contractors. From what I saw, what they did, I just can't picture a state trooper. I can't picture even a federal agent. Definitely can't picture a sheriff or even a local police force doing what they did the way they did it. And that one guy walking around put his finger up in the air. I mean, what kind of people do that? That's not. I just can't. As messed up as our the FBI is. And I remember the fight the FBI had when they lost the battle. Ultimately, they've lost control. The good guys lost control of the FBI and was taken over, I think, ultimately by the CIA, if I understand it correctly. And the whole thing has fallen apart. But even with all that, I just don't see those people acting the way that they did. Okay? And that was an execution. I mean, there was no reason to put all those bullets out there. I mean, it was pop, 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 pop. They just didn't want to stop. This guy didn't have a chance. He had nothing.
Wasn't there some serious precision? Like, didn't they use a rubber bullet to first make him reach for his side, like he was going to pull a gun, so they could say that?
I did not hear a rubber bullet anywhere, and I saw the forensic.
And I think in one of the videos, Gerard was talking about it. It looks like they shot a rubber bullet like into Lavoie's hip to make him reach for his side.
I think they shot him with a taser, but that was later, a little later into it. But no, the bullet that hit him in the hip, when you look at the, I'm pretty sure at the forensic, you know, when they did the autopsy, we've got that, and I think we have a copy of that up on the website. I didn't see any information that would lead us to think that any of those bullets were rubber at all. Okay. That first shot was to make him go for his hip. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
And that's what that was all about. There's no doubt about that in my mind or heart. And even the gun that they tried to stick on him, it wouldn't even fit.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of precision, I basically what I'm saying is I agree with you. It doesn't seem like it'd be any local folk. But, Marlo, let me ask you this.
Down on the ground, do you still have to keep shooting them? I mean, you know, that's the question there also. I mean, they kept shooting the guy.
Yeah. I think they wanted one outcome. But
yes.
All right, so look at here. You have this cryptocurrency, and I like the idea behind these cryptocurrencies. I don't know if you're familiar with them, and it's taken the power away from central banks, but for you know, I'm of a generation where you know you and I know you are too. I'm after your generation, but you get what you know. It's more of an Adam Smith type of thing. You get the money that you earn, and these cryptocurrencies. I like the idea because they're taking power away from the Fed and central bankers. But the flip side is that it's all digital, and that kind of leads into the mark of the beast type of deal here, which is kind of scary. But then also here in America, isn't it that according to our Constitution that the only form of money can be coined by our Congress? And so anyway, I don't know if you know enough about this stuff, but I'm wondering if you could.
I think it's quite simple. Nothing but gold or silver should be legal tender. That's what our Constitution says, the coins. And that's what legal tender is. Now, as far as bitcoins and things like that, if people want to participate with them, I hear that it's been doing pretty well. But, you know, look at that. That is subject to as much corruption as anything else. And I'll tell you what, even buying silver and gold, I mean, I can't believe how many people go out and buy silver and gold, and then they leave it in the safe of the people selling it to them. Like, they're not going to multiply it 10 times like the rest of the bankers did eventually at one point when they see the papers never come back to take the real silver or the gold. It's too easy to really burn the people. And the other thing is if we had a collapse the society, okay, let's say the monetary system collapsed. How are you going to go get your gold and silver if it's sitting in this guy's safe? You know, that's another problem again, and that's dealing with gold and silver. People need to take care of their own money, put it in their pocket and get themselves a safe or do whatever they have to do to protect and keep their money and save their money, you know? Anybody saving dollar bills is crazy. But I'll tell you what, I don't know much about Bitcoin, so I really can't speak on them. But from what I'm hearing, the way that they are escalating in value so quickly over such a short period of time, it makes me wonder if there isn't an inflation here. I just don't know.
Well, a couple of things. They're not as subject, even though they just started a futures market on it now, as of I think yesterday. They're not subject to the manipulation that gold and silver are, because it's a closed system, and this fella who created it, and that's a mystery. No one knows who he really is, this Japanese fella. It's a closed system, but supposedly the computer program behind it, the math behind it, is so utterly brilliant that no one can seem to really damage it, and no one can get into it. So it's not as subject, but I have heard of issues with it, and Brent talks about a monopoly of force and violence. And so if you did try to cash out, I think I did hear of one instance, if you did try to cash out, you might be arrested by our government. There are ways around that. But anyway, I guess I got the answer from you that I was looking for about the gold and silver.
I'm nervous of the bitcoins, but again, I don't have the knowledge to really be negative about them, so I don't know.
Yeah. So, okay, one more thing just to bring up. I saw this case. This woman is driving around, and I had brought this up several months ago and discussed it with you and Brent. I think Gerard too. This woman's driving around in Texas, or at least she was, in a Texas town, and she has a F Trump and F you for voting for him, and on the back of her truck, and the sheriff, clearly he's not been educated like most sheriffs, he makes a plea to her about talking to him and seeing if they can have a discussion about this vulgar sign on the back of her truck, and then the ACLU chimes in and says, oh, look here, the Supreme Court said that this is a First Amendment right, and from our discussion from months ago, you know, we came to the logical conclusion that the First Amendment right has nothing to do with a license to be vulgar. Anyway, I just thought it's a good thing to bring up about your educating the sheriff's program, because this sheriff really sounds
This FU thing, was it the letter FU, or did they literally spell it out?
She literally spelled it out, but she seemed to have the F-bomb taped over in both cases, but it was big letters on the back of her truck. Even though she had the F-bomb...
I cringe. Look at that. I cringe when I hear people talk like that, and when I see things like that on T-shirts or just signs somewhere. You know, sometimes I watch a good video, and they give it some good information, and then all of a sudden the F-word comes out, or this other word. It degrades the whole thing. I'm at it. At some point, I don't even want to listen to these people no more, even though they're bringing good news. I just don't want to listen, because I think they're degrading themselves. And look at, we want to bring our children into this. I don't want to sit with my children to listen to someone speak like that or express things that way. And I think it's the same thing in the streets. I'll tell you what, you know, I come from New York City, and, you know, this gay parade thing started many years ago. And I went down to Manhattan one time to see this thing. And it was Sodom and Gomorrah. It was disgusting. You can't bring your children into the streets. This just shouldn't be allowed. You know, there's what's the word? There's corrupting the morals of a minor. Okay, certain things. You know, if people want to express themselves that way, they need to do it privately, and definitely shouldn't be doing in public where children can hear. And that's my opinion, anyway.
No, totally. I think Brent discusses this in Excellence of the Common Law. You don't allow, or something similar, you don't allow sex in the streets. And
yeah.
And with the gay pride, we have it down here in Atlanta big time. We're second per capita to San Francisco. Talk about crazy. But and I know plenty of nice gay folk, but they take it to the point where they kind of do this slap-ass and thing in public, and it's like, okay, you're more than welcome to engage in anything in private matters, but you take it too far. Like we don't allow men and women to slap-ass in public, and pardon my language, but I had to get the point across.
Well,
there.
You go down to the gay parades in New York City, they walk around with the back of their pants cut off, and who wants to look at their tired asses to begin with, you know? But that's what they... That's what they do, and it's degrading. I mean, come on, I don't care about anybody's sexual tendencies, whichever way they want to lean. That's their business. But you know, people generally speaking don't go around talking about sex in public and expressing themselves that way in public. And if they do, then again, it needs to be stopped. It needs to be. Again, you have corrupting the morals of a minor. You can't do these things in public.
Right, indeed.
It's just wrong.
Okay,
you know? Do it in private. Have a ball, you know?
Exactly, so. Totally. All right, thank you. Thank you much. Okay. I appreciate it.
All right, let's go to our next caller here. And anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6, we only got a few people in the queue. Will, go right ahead. Will, your mic has been opened up. Go right ahead. You got the mic.
I don't have anything, John.
Oh, okay. Let me go to the next one. Let's go to, Keith from Texas. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Keith. Anybody want to get into the queue, star 6?
Okay, John, I got basically a prayer, two comments, and a question. Are you ready for it?
Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to thank y'all. I mean, may God continue to bless the NLA's mission, because y'all truly helped me in preparing for court. Because when you go to court, it is a battle. So that was my prayer. Anyway, like I said, I went to criminal court to fight, and you've got to fight for yourself for your rights, because it is a battle. I had 4 criminal trespass charges dismissed about a month after I questioned the court's jurisdiction. So I'm glad y'all prepared me for my fight. And anyway, just the question I had for you, because I talked to a lot of attorneys before this, and every one of them told me to plead to take the deal that was given to me. If you hire an attorney, are you basically waiving your rights in the court?
Yeah, that's a good question, because ultimately you are, in my opinion, because he takes control, and unless you have a partnership working out with them, and I don't know of many lawyers that allow you to work a partnership, I would never give the authority of my case over to any individual, ever. You know, if I can get someone that really knows the law, get someone like Brent, and have him work with me on a case, maybe if it's a criminal case against me, but I want to be 100% involved, and I'm going to be part of this decision-making, and even when the papers are being written, I'm going to want to read those papers, maybe even make some changes. Now, in today's environment, that may cause a problem with a lawyer, because the changes I would make, the lawyer would get in trouble for. You know, me, I wouldn't get in trouble for those things that I would say and put in my papers, you know, or the way that I would push things, but or things that I would ask for. Look at how many lawyers you think would go about suing a judge. I mean,
that's what I'm looking for.
We've put a lot of people, we've put a lot of judges on the chopping block over the years, sued them directly, you know. You're not going to get a lawyer to do that, because their license, the quote-unquote license, is going to be in jeopardy. Maybe even their freedom would be in jeopardy.
Who, if you've been, like I said, they dropped all charges within a month after, all four charges within a month after I fought them. Who would you get you're needing to go after to get remedy for, to get compensation for the injustice that was done? Because I was put in prison four times, 50 hours in prison, and every time my due process was not given to me, because the property in question was still in my name. And I kept going to the DA, and he just kept trying to give me probation. I said, what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of U.S. codes. I think they're USC 18, and there's also 42. One's civil, one's criminal. And you must be familiar with those, acting under the color of law, going out on the highway and so on and so forth, violating your unalienable rights. You see, those are the codes they like to see. I just went after a whole bunch of people in government. I mean, a whole bunch, probably about, in fact, 13 of them, to be exact. And
you did it by yourself?
Huh?
By yourself?
Yeah, me. I did it, yes. And in the case of these people, okay, I went after them for violating, they're all people in office or a power and authority. They violated my unalienable rights. So I went out after them for that. You know, when I put all my paperwork together and I filed in the federal court and I had to fill out the papers in the federal court, you know, they said, the clerk told me, hey, you got to put a statute in there. I said, well, I got the Constitution. It trumps the statutes. He says, yeah, I know, but you got to put a statute. And he suggested, USC, I think it was 42. I think that's the criminal side of things, or maybe it's 18.
Yeah, there's a lot of 42.
Yeah, 1863 or something like that. I forget what the numbers are. But, you know, he suggested, I said, I already got that in there. He said, we'll put it on that paper and we'll push it right through. They like to see the statutes. I'll give them the statutes because, look, those are good statutes. Those statutes were written to protect us against them.
Mm-hmm.
So those are good statutes. They're lawful statutes.
Yes.
And, you know, they were properly put together for the sole purpose to control out-of-control bureaucrats. And you know, Congress was doing their job back then, I guess. But so you could use those statutes to use them. But there's all kinds of course, constitutional issues that you can, you know, bring in there, you know, amendments, okay, you know, if it's a free speech thing or if it's a due process thing, whatever it is. I mean, the Fifth Amendment is one that's constantly going in there.
Nobody's done the one I want to go after. Nobody's done a Third Amendment challenge. Quartering of truths.
Yeah, I know Brent was talking about that last week.
He was? Okay, I didn't listen last week, but I'm telling you.
Yeah, you should go back and listen to the
I will.
Just go to the beginning when Brent started talking. I'm pretty sure it was last week that he was covering, unless it was the week before.
Okay, no, I'll look at that. I've been very busy lately, but I will very well look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you. All right. We only have, by the way, we only have one more caller in the queue. So if anybody wants to get into the queue, you know, star six, let's take our next caller.
Star six plus one, John.
Star six plus one. Okay. All right. Let me take our next caller. Is it Barrett? Is that how you pronounce that? North Carolina? Hey, Gerard, are you here, by the way? Well, he's missing an action tonight. Barrett, North Carolina, you got the mic. 828, area code, North Carolina. One more time, Barrett, you got the mic. And by the way, you know, there's nobody else in the queue, so if anybody's got anything.
Can you hear me now?
Go right ahead, Barrett. Is that how you pronounce your name, Barrett? B-A-R-E-N-T?
Barrett. There's no N. Barrett.
Oh, okay, Barrett. Oh, okay, there's an N in there, so we got to move that N. But go ahead, Barrett.
Yeah, question for Brent. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Brent, you here? Looks like he's still here.
Well, I'm here. In all the codes and statutes, the singular includes the plural includes the singular, correct?
Well, not in every case, but as a general rule, unless indicated otherwise,
Okay. In the Declaration of 76, the first paragraph, of course, you know that one quite well.
The when and the course of human events and all that. And go ahead.
Okay, hold on a second here. When in the course of human events becomes necessary for one people, which I'm going back to the singular here, to dissolve the political bonds which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you were talking about, you know, how did the government tax you with your consent? Are you a registered voter?
No.
No, you're not?
Nope.
You didn't give consent. That's how you give your consent, to register to vote.
Well, that's a fraud. That's a fraud, though.
We know that.
So no one ever really gave any consent to anyone. Look, they just took their authority, and they tried to write law on it that has no standing whatsoever, no power, no authority, as if it never been written.
Okay, I'm trying to find a court in North Carolina that has criminal jurisdiction, and I can't find one.
Has one kind of jurisdiction?
I haven't found one yet either. I understand what you're saying. You know, of course,
all their jurisdictions.
Federal courts, if they're Article III courts, which is what they're supposed to be, if that's what they were operating as, then they have that power and authority. But they're not acting that way. They're making laws up, but they're making everything up as they go. And
That's Article I courts. Everything is civil.
Well, there's no such thing as an Article I court.
That's
I know people refer back into where the judges are... Are really approved by Congress in there, but there's no such thing as an Article I court. There's only an Article III court, period.
Well, they're administering their employees.
It's been a while since I addressed that. I'm trying to remember where in the... I'm looking at my Constitution right now to see where exactly it is that people get that idea that there is a Article I court, but there's no such animal. But go ahead. I'll look
it's the administrative court administering the rules of the government upon its employees.
Well, look, there's all kinds of administrative courts, if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're all administrative courts, every one of them.
Well, they're acting as administrative courts. You're right, and because they're not—they certainly are not courts of law, because they're not acting like them. They're supposed to be, and that's the crime. That's the lawlessness. They're supposed to be, but they're not. So, all
But I don't see where there's a criminal jurisdiction anywhere, because federal courts only have civil jurisdiction. They don't have criminal.
Well, certainly they do. Yeah, they do. You know, look at isn't it a criminal act when a bureaucrat with power and authority comes under color of law and violates your rights? Isn't that a criminal act?
Oh, absolutely it is.
And that must be heard in an Article III court. That's the jurisdiction of the federal courts, of the Article III courts. What kills me is when these lawyers and judges, and I've had these judges quote these stupid decisions by federal district courts as if they have some power, authority, or meaning to me. They mean nothing. They mean nothing to nobody. I mean, because some judge made something in another court up, and that's supposed to be now law in this court. You know, I just had an argument with a judge over this, which I'm writing a paper on. He's quoting some decision by some federal judge somewhere about the money. You know, when they collect money to go into a federal court, they charge you $400, by the way. And they can't give it back to you because it goes into the U.S. Treasury and they have it now, which I don't believe anyway. But in any event, what does a federal district court, they don't make law. You know, if you can't give me a statute or anything on that, at least a statute. And, of course, if it gives me a statute, I'll show them where the statute is not constitutional, and therefore it still is no law.
I don't see the statute as unconstitutional. What it is that's under Article 1. It's Article 1, Section 18, where they make the rules for the government?
Any statute made in order to control the bureaucratic process is fine. And you know, they have the power and the authority. Congress has the power and the authority to do that through Section 8, particularly Article 1, Section 8. But they don't have the power and the authority to control our behavior, okay? So they can't make any laws, statutes, that would be law to control our behavior.
I agree with you, but here's the thing, is they believe that you're a government employee. That's why you have to pay a federal income tax.
Well, again, you know, they know the truth. They know they're liars and frauds and thieves, and it's all about money. They know that people are being damaged and destroyed by it. They know that they have no constitutional authority, no authority has been given to them. And here it is where they call these Article 1 courts. It's in Article 1, Section 8. It looks like, let's see, number 9. It says to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. Okay? And that's the federal district courts. The tribunals, to constitute the tribunals are actually the judges themselves. Remember, you know, when you go in, there's an appellate system and process in the federal court. You first go into the court, and if you're going to deal with it without going through a jury, using a jury, unless it's a criminal case, they have to use a jury. But if you're in the court, there's no jury, you have a judge. He makes a decision. If you don't like that decision, you appeal that decision. And this is the tribunal that they create. They then have a panel of judges. And I don't know how many, I think there's two appeals, and then there's the possibility of the United States Supreme Court. Do I have that right, Brent? How many appeals do you get in the federal, how many appeals are possible in the federal courts?
Brent, the appeal, can you hear me? I don't know if I'm wrong. Oh, yeah, you appeal from the district court to the federal appellate courts, and then from the federal appellate courts, the possibility of appeal exists to the Supreme Court of the United States. But also the bureaucratic courts, like the tax court,
right,
and all those courts can appeal lies to the federal district courts if they want to appeal. And you made mention a while ago, I do understand what you mean by Article 3 courts, and that's true because it talks about them there, but Congress of the United States has the power to end both the federal courts, all of them, except one, and that's the Supreme Court of the United States.
Right.
Because
But
what you said is true. I'm just fleshing it out a little bit, that the
The only court that the Constitution of the United States directly establishes is the Supreme Court of the United States. And the other federal district courts
and this inferior courts to them, which gives us federal district courts. And, of course, there are a lot of administrative courts. But, again, both sides agree to participate. If you don't get both sides agreeing to participate, then they don't have to participate. And I could tell you for a fact, because I've been in this battle against the Department of Labor, they have an administrative court system. It's really a really rinky-dink, silly little thing that they got going there. But you have to participate. You have to, you know, agree to go into the system. So once you become, you know, sign up as an employer and you start to put in the monies and go by their rules and stuff, now you've agreed, now you're stuck under their administrative process and you have to go through that before you can go into a court of law. And that's understandable. That's a contract. That's what you agreed to. And people should know what they're doing. If they don't know what they're doing, then maybe they shouldn't do it and try to figure out what they should do before they do it. Unfortunately, you know, the state will try to make you believe you have to participate. And they try to force you into it and tell you that you're going to go to jail or something, or you can get fined or something if you don't participate. All of that is a bunch of BS, at least here in New York. Cause I went through that whole system, and they never got a dime out of me.
I think the thing that's important maybe to start and to teach first principles about the courts is that the state courts are courts of unlimited jurisdiction. The state courts are courts of unlimited jurisdiction. That means they can hear anything. Any kind of a case that arises, you can lodge it with the state court. But the federal courts aren't that way. The federal courts are courts of limited jurisdiction. The only things that they're allowed to hear is what the Constitution says they're allowed to hear. And their jurisdiction is limited further by Congress. Congress can limit the jurisdiction of all of the federal courts, any one of them. They limit one and not another. And they do it all the time, by the way. They'll pass legislation that says and say the federal courts have no jurisdiction to rule in this area of timber on federal land or some little thing about it. That's just one example I remember. There are all sorts of things that limit the jurisdiction of the federal courts. And,
yeah, but I don't think the state courts can hear a constitutional issue.
Oh yeah, you can. Yeah, they can. They can. But
can they?
But usually.
You know, well,
when that
I know because. You know, if you look into the Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, it says the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties, and so on. So, you know, if I haven't, you know, when I went up against the IRS some years ago, and I took it into the state court because I figured, hey, you know, the way I was thinking logically was that I'm going to go after these guys in the state court because the state should be protecting me. Of course, that was a dumb idea also. It was as dumb as going into the federal courts. But in any event, they pulled me out real quick. And I made
They removed it, you're saying. Removed the federal jurisdiction.
That's
but
right.
Consider this. Let's say, and it's possible, and I would advocate the idea in many cases, that Congress just said we're sick. Now, these blasted federal courts, they're not following the law. We're going to end their jurisdiction and shut them down. And so they pass a piece of legislation and shut down every federal court
in the
United States.
Well, maybe that's not that good for us. Maybe that's not that good for us.
Well, I don't know. But if that happens.
Just what are you going to do to protect yourself from the state judges? You see, that's the
other
problem.
Well, that's the problem. But at the same time, that's true, too. But at the same time, the state courts, see, would have to hear all questions. And they can hear them now. It's just that if you go into state court with a federal question, as you tried to do, the federal government, if you're against them, will immediately remove it to the federal courts so they can get in the jurisdiction they want to get in. But no, state courts can hear anything on any subject, except there is one caveat. If Congress passes a piece of legislation and excludes state jurisdiction, in other words, they can say, the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction over this matter. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to think. It's not the Civil Rights Act of 1983, I don't think. But one of those acts, because I got involved in a case like that one time. I was going to go into state court and found out I couldn't do it. I looked into legislation that Congress can limit the jurisdiction to make it exclusive in the federal courts, but they hardly ever do that. And so the state courts, if you had a constitutional question about freedom of speech, the right to remain silent, the
the Second Amendment, any of those things. The state courts have power to hear those.
You would
those
imagine
questions.
That they would make the right decision and enforce the proper law here. The problem is, unfortunately, they don't. And that's why, from the other standpoint, we do kind of need the federal courts. Because I use the federal court against the state court all the time.
Right. Well, here's what I'm looking
at. That's right. That's right.
North Carolina Dental Statutes, this is the legislature, Civil Rules Procedure says one form of action. There shall be in the state but one form of action for the enforcement of a protection of private rights or redress of private wrongs, which shall be deemed denominated civil action. Okay,
well, that's interesting that you say that, because the moment you just said that, it made me realize, yes, we have state constitutions. We have a Bill of Rights here in New York, and it marries the Bill of Rights of the federal constitution. So here you got state judges that must obey their own state Bill of Rights, their state constitution, and if you're applying that and pushing that down them, down their throat, so to speak, and trying to make them be obedient to that, thereby they're being obedient to the federal constitution. But when it's in violation to the federal constitution, that's when you want to have that federal judge up there that you can go and bring them before that. And I'll tell you what, sometimes it's a good thing to bring these judges and these prosecutors or all these, bureaucrats, even on the state level, in before a federal judge, because they seem to have disdain for these people. I see the way they treat these lawyers coming up from the state level. I mean, and they don't read the federal rules. At least I abide by the federal rules, So, but they don't read the federal rules. They do stupid things, and they seem to have disdain for them, which is beneficial to me, of course, or to you.
Right. Well, I'm also looking at the Chapter 15 North Carolina Dental Statute, 15A, title of the chapters, Criminal Procedure Act. That Title 15A1, the 101's the definitions. 101's electronic technology and criminal processing procedures. And then it goes to Article 2, jurisdiction. Sections 15A102 to 15A130 reserved for future codification. They never gave the courts criminal jurisdiction.
Who did? Congress?
That's true.
I'm talking about the state legislature never gave the state courts criminal jurisdiction. It's all civil.
What state is this?
North Carolina.
I wouldn't know. I don't know. And by the way, this is a call out to anybody. Everybody should go up to thepowerofthecountysheriff.org and go under the law documents. When you click on that, you can find constitutions, state constitutions. If your state constitution isn't there, please try to get us a copy. We need it in PDF. I've had people give me copies, send me links where I can read online, but I'd have to actually cut and paste and create a PDF out of it. They don't have a PDF download on it. So if anybody can find their PDF constitutions for their states, because we only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 14, 21. I got 22 constitutions up here. So we're missing a few states, more than half. But go ahead. Back to you.
But I'm contending that the state court here in North Carolina does not have criminal jurisdiction.
It's, I don't know.
Everything is civil. So they're even putting people in jail for what we would consider a common law crime under a civil action.
Yeah, but I don't know how that could possibly be. I mean, what happens if someone murders someone in that state?
It's still, that's a commercial crime.
No, that's, what do you mean a commercial crime?
It's all commercial. All crimes are commercial.
No, they may, all their courts may be operating under commercial procedures, and they mix things up. They take the law of the sea and the law of the land and the law in the mind of the judge and the law in the minds of the other federal judges or anybody that can agree with whatever their conclusions that they want to have. They seem to just mix it together and throw it in. And if you don't argue and speak up against it, they'll take advantage of you, I'll tell you that. They realize that you're looking up all this stuff and you're questioning these things, now they're going to second guess themselves before they say anything or do anything. But I don't think that that's possible. You must be missing something. You really got to be missing something.
Well, I've been trying to find it because it says under the Criminal Procedures Act jurisdiction to be reserved for future codification.
Don't they refer in the Constitution, don't they refer to court of record anywhere? This is what, North Carolina?
Yeah.
Okay, in North Carolina, let me see, control find. I got your Constitution here. Okay, let's see, court of record. I don't see that phrase in there.
If you find the Constitution, go to Article 14.
I don't even see the word record in there. But that doesn't, I don't know, I'd have to read through your Constitution and try to see if how they would work that out. I don't know. I'm familiar with New York State Constitution because that's where I live. But I'm not familiar with yours.
Hey, the North Carolina
Constitution. I just can't see that possible. Brent, what do you think on this? I can't see that that's possible.
Well, obviously, North Carolina has exercised criminal jurisdiction for many decades. And whether or not they have it. And I think the common law would provide it without, if you're saying they got to have legislation.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't have
that's
to have,
right.
They don't have to have legislation.
I never
common law
that.
Provides that jurisdiction by nature. And if people commit murders, they can impanel the jury.
Right,
sure
they have
they
sheriffs
do.
Down there, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, if I were sheriff and somebody told me you don't have criminal jurisdiction because the state legislature never granted it, I just said, well, that's they can do what they want to do. I'm going to do what I know to be is the law. And that's
right.
The way it's supposed to be. But now I'm sure they have criminal jurisdiction. Who says that a state legislature has to grant that jurisdiction to a court? Because a court at common law is separate from the legislative power. It isn't subject to the legislative power.
Look at this. I found it. Section 19 in his Constitution. It says right here, Section 19. Uh-huh. Law of the land, just what you're talking about, Brent. Law of the land, equal protection of the laws. No person shall be taken in prison or deceased of his freehold, liberties or privileges, or outlawed or exiled, or in any manner deprived of his life, liberty, or property, but by the law of the land. No person shall be denied the equal protection of the laws, nor shall any person be subject to the discrimination by the state because of race, color, religion, or national or origin. There it is. He's got right there is the law of the land is in focus, just what Brent is talking about.
And the law of the land is the phrase lifted from Magna Carta. And it means the same thing in our Constitution. Our Supreme Court has said it means the same thing in our Constitution as it meant in Magna Carta. Law of the land means the process that is due because our common law is process. It's not result-oriented, it's process-oriented. We let the chips fall where they may. That's what I think about it. I don't know what North Carolina is doing down there.
Well,
there are
a few others here also. Inquiry into restraints on liberty. Every person restrained of his liberty is entitled to a remedy to inquire into the lawfulness thereof. And again, this is all focused in on the common law. And look at the courts have their authority under the common law. I'd much rather have them authority under the under the common law than any congressional act or anything. You know, there needs to be on a federal level a congressional act in order to bring together the tribunals and also, you know, to establish the courts. And inferior to that of the United States court, the federal courts need to do that. On the state level, I don't know that that's necessarily all. I don't know how that would work, but I don't think the courts were here before the states were, wouldn't they?
Yeah, no question. Men were impaneling courts in every state before they were swept.
Yeah. So you've got the courts of law already in. We didn't even need Congress in the states on those levels.
Right. Well, here in North Carolina, they define the city, the county, and the state as body politics.
Well, they try to do something similar to like that in New York. They've got this, they've taken the courts, the state courts, and the county courts, where the Constitution is clear on what they are, the power and the authorities, and all other courts are inferior to that. They're really administrative. But what they've done is they've done They brought them together under one organization. We use the same word, and for some reason I can't think of it in our grand jury. Unified. They've unified the courts. So if you go into, and I have no idea how they get the power and the authority to do that, and what does it even mean to unify the courts? I go into the town court down here where I live, and there's a little plaque there or something talking about being one of the unified courts of the state, yep, of New York State courts.
Well, here in North Carolina.
That's a bunch of baloney.
If you'll back up to Article 14 in the Constitution, Section 3, general law is defined whenever the General Assembly is directed to or authorized by this Constitution to enact general laws or general laws uniformly applicable throughout the state or general laws uniformly applicable to every county, city, and town and other unit of government. You got to be part of the body politic to be subject to the statutes. Otherwise, you're subject to common law only.
But
that's the way I'm reading it.
I don't see it being a bad thing being part of the body politic, do you?
I do. That's your consent to be under those statutes.
The body politic really ultimately became the committees of safety, which created our nation. They're the ones that brought the whole thing together, brought together the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution. They had all the debates and the arguments all under the body politic called the committees of safety. And the committees of safety morphed into what we know today as the committeemen. The problem is when you get into that language, they've distorted the language so much to make you believe and think that it's part of their thinking and conclusions and lawlessness. And we want to try to separate ourselves, like, you know, don't call yourself a citizen in a court of law, which I agree with that at this point. It's too dangerous to call yourself that in these courts. But you can do it and you can get away with it as long as you clarify it and they see your other positions are, you know, that you got all your ducks in a row on your other positions, of course. And that's what will make them nervous. That's what you're really trying to do is make them so nervous that they obey the law. But being part of the body politics, that's the people. No, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, let me make, if I may make another comment.
That's governed by consent. Once you sign up into the body politic, you've given consent to be governed by it.
We're not governed by nobody. Look at it's the we're governed by law, and it's the Constitution that governs them, and therein is the problem. They're not obedient to that, and we're not applying the law against them. That's why we need to take back the courts and take back the body politic, so to speak, the committeeman process, and take back the political process. Brent, you wanted to say something?
Well, thanks for recognizing me. I didn't know if you could hear me when I spoke, but what I was going to say was the law of the land. It's called the law of the land because it doesn't make any difference what body politic you're in. If you're within the jurisdiction of the boundaries on a particular parcel of real estate governed by the government of those people, that's it. It doesn't make any difference who you are or if your foot's on the ground or you're part of the land, that ends it. And that's what makes us different than the rest of the world. And I know that some people say, I don't want to participate. Well, you don't have to participate at a certain level. But if you commit a crime within the jurisdictional boundaries, the territoriality of the state of Indiana or Ohio or Pennsylvania, you're subject to their laws. You come into that jurisdiction according to the common law. You live there. You pass through there. You benefit from the protection of the law of that particular juridical entity, that jurisdiction. And you owe obedience to the laws of that territory. That's the law of the land. That is not true in the rest of the world. The law of the city is not about land. It's about people. And it's about dominating men. It's about numbers. It's about fleecing men. It's about worshiping the land and worshiping the environment and dominating men. And our common law is about dominating the land and serving other men. But along with that, it's called the law of the land for a very important reason, and quite a few important reasons. One of them being that it's all about territory. It's all about where you live, where you sit, where you eat and breathe and work and move and live and have your being, as the apostle says. So land is important to the law of the land, and
If you're on the land of the state of North Carolina, for example, you don't want to participate, that's your privilege. As a matter of fact, non-participation is just as much of a vote as voting. Non-participation, you don't want to hold public office, you don't have to. But if you do live on the land, and if you are called in for jury duty, the common law says you have a duty to defend the law of the land, and you do that by serving on the jury. And if you're not willing to do that, you're disobeying the God that made you. That's what he called us all to do, to defend the law of the land against enemies domestic, that means serve on the jury, and to defend the land itself from enemies foreign, that means be willing to take up arms as a member of the militia. That's the law of God in the Bible, and that's the way he puts it, in many different ways. And it's also our common law. The two fundamental duties of government are jury duty, that's enemies domestic, having to do with the law of the land, defending it, and enemies foreign, and that has to do with the armed defense. It all comes down to the land, because the land is the thing that's important to the Maker. Mankind, the Bible tells us, is God's crowning of his creation. And he put man on his land to dress it and keep it. He did it with our first grandpa, and he's done it with all of the rest of us ever since. And there's not a one of us that's ever lived on the faces of earth that has not been dependent upon the land that God gave us, even if you live in a houseboat by the millions, tied up like they are over in Hong Kong and all those places, Shanghai and those places. You're still dependent upon the land. That's why you tie up next to the land. You can't live forever on the open sea. God didn't make us that way. So I just make those comments about the importance of land and how God attaches importance to his land. He is the allodial land owner, and we are stewards and trustees of the land. And the land is not something to him. It's everything. And that's why we're here. We aren't here for any other reason but to take care of his land. And I know that sounds maybe self-serving to him, but when you don't have any competition, it's not self-serving, and he has none. And the land then becomes the connection between us and the God that made us. That is why Jesus Christ said, "Pray, thy will be done on land as it is in the skies." Because the will of God comes down, that's his law, comes from the skies where everything's perfect and everything operates according to mathematical perfection. And it comes down here. It comes down here and it arises to us from the land. The connection is beyond our comprehension, but we can see a lot of it. And that spells the story of God's relationship to his creature, right, man. Anyway, just want to mention that.
Well,
I think it's
also
important. Back to you, John.
One of the conflicts we're seeing in what we think might be in one and not in the other, and I'm talking about the federal constitution versus the state constitutions. You know, remember, the courts were here before the states were. So we had courts. And judges, at least in our time, and for as long as I know, and I presume all the way back then too, were elected by the people, okay? They were chosen by the people. But in the federal, when the federal government was put together, one of the problems they had, you couldn't elect federal judges. I mean, there was a problem with that to begin with. So the courts had to be established by Congress. And they debated this out in the Federalist Papers. And not everything that they debated out and ended up with was great, but I think that a lot of the repairs of the problems that exist in the Constitution was really deleted out by the Bill of Rights, because you have to read the Constitution in light of the Bill of Rights, and that really got rid of a lot of problems, and so they can't go do anything that's going to affect or jeopardize your liberty, although they do that because the people are so ignorant that most people don't even know it, but we have to fix that problem. But so they created a process. And they created a process. You couldn't elect the marshals, so the marshals were appointed. They're appointed by the president. And in Marbury versus Madison, when they tried to get rid of marshals or try to get someone, get rid of a judge or somebody, certain problems came up. And they had to fulfill their term. Marbury versus Madison made it clear. Look, the president can appoint the marshals or other judicial officers, but nowhere is he given the power to remove them. And that makes all the sense in the world. A marshal serves a term, I don't know whether it's 4 years or 6 years, I don't remember what it was, but they serve a certain term. And then when that term is up, whoever's president at the time could re-choose that person again or put another one in. But a judge can't get rid of a marshal. The president can't get rid of a marshal. He's got the power and the authority of a sheriff on a federal level. The only ones that get rid of a marshal is, of course, Congress can get rid of a marshal. They can impeach him. And if the people can get rid of a marshal, they can indict him. But other than that, his term has to be served out. And so you couldn't elect them. So they had to be appointed, and they were appointed by the president. The president appoints all of the judicial levels. He appoints the judges and so on. But they have to serve out their terms. I think even the judges, isn't that true on the federal level? Isn't that true there, Brent?
Well, yeah, they have life terms if they want to keep them.
Well, I don't think they should have life terms. But they do have life terms, do they?
They do, yeah. If they want to keep them, they can stay there.
Can we fix that?
Well, we can fix it by impeaching them, yeah.
Hopefully that's what some of these indictments are going to come out and do.
Yeah. Impeachment is the answer. Go ahead.
Yes.
Well, here's
where
I'm getting
at. We'll impeach. Go ahead.
United States Corporation, 1871. We all know about that.
Null and void means nothing.
Okay.
See,
here's
the problem.
Here's what's going on. Okay, the state of North Carolina, the state of New York, they're political subdivisions of that United States Corporation.
Yeah, but it's all a fraud. You see, here's the problem with that. If you try to fight them in their sandbox using their terms, giving them the power that they claim they have, you just empowered them. When you deny it and call it for what it is, they have no place to go. They're stuck naked right out there in the fields, and they can't do a darn thing. Make it clear on the paper. I make my papers clear as a bell. Don't bring it in because it's not the law. I don't even talk about it, but the papers clarify it and make it clear. They're not going to bring that garbage in. It's not going to come to any kind of light in a courtroom where I'm fighting. Why? Because I'm treating it for what it is. It's no law at all. It's as if it never had been enacted. And that's how we have to deal with it. And so, you know, we're the people, and we decide what our Constitution what it was and what it is, and they have to obey it because they think that they can create an act somehow, and all of a sudden that act can create another situation, and next thing you know they create a city within a state within a city within a municipality. And I mean, who are these people? They're crazy. And when we fall for all this garbage, no, it's a fraud. That's not who they are. That's what we're battling right now. It's called the deep state. And I'll tell you, I mentioned earlier today in the earlier part of this program, out on our website, if you go on to thepowerofthecountysheriff.org and go under the news, I think it's called unconstitutional something. Let me see if I can find it here. Yeah, Constitution in Jeopardy. Go underneath that, okay, and then scroll down. I'll tell you what, this guy made it clear, I understand clearly now, how the shadow government or the, what the deep state actually is, okay? And it's the name of this one, let me see how many down it is. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 video down. And it says CIA agent whistleblower risks all to expose the shadow government. And he defines the deep state. And it's pretty interesting the way he laid that out. And how the powers and the structures and what controls everything. It's all about, as we know, it's the bankers and the oil. That's what it is. And of course, they control the justice system. And so they got the money, they got the oil, and they got the justice system. Then there's the military-industrial complex. I mean, this guy laid it all out, he exposed it for what it was. But, you see, we have to treat it for what it is. It's subversion against the United States of America by enemies, both foreign and domestic. You don't want to play in their sandbox, because once you go in there and you start quoting their stuff and yielding to their powers and authorities and acknowledging this and using this term to get around that term, they're going to play games right with you, and they're going to take you out.
You got to make them prove jurisdiction.
Well, look, they'll slap a hammer and say, I got it. I can't tell you how many judges I heard say that until I understood how to deal with those people. You got to remove them from the bench immediately. You know, I tell them what the jurisdiction is. If they don't accept it, then they go on to the defendant's list. We move into the higher court. Put them onto a defendant's list for violating my right of due process just to begin with. And that's how you deal with them. I'm not going to argue jurisdiction with these guys when I know they haven't got it. They don't even know whether they got it or not, some of them. I don't think they don't even know what they're doing half the time, at least on the state levels. The federal guys, they're real evil, in my opinion, because they know exactly what they're doing. But a lot of these state people, they just get themselves in more and more trouble, you know? But again, look at once you let them have any power and authority over you that they don't have, then you're done. They're going to get you. They're going to kangaroo you into a corner, and you're done. Very few people can get out of that. But you got to deal with them the way it is. This is what the law. This is the jurisdiction. I have a right of due process, and if you're not going to give it to me, we're going to see a federal judge. And the federal judges, I'm telling you, I'm kind of surprised. They don't like lawyers from coming up from the state to come into their federal courts. So that's one up for us. And I don't think they're under the pressure that they would be if you were battling a federal issue, like against the IRS or something like that. It's a whole different story. You know, there's the pressure on the federal judge to do something for, you know, the powers that be. But when you bring a problem up from the state into the federal court, it's like, I'm not going to put my rear end on the line for you, Mr. Judge or Mr. Lawyer down there. I don't owe you nothing. I don't know you, and I'm not going to see you again probably anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of attitude here is what it is. And, you know, if they got attitudes against each other, you might as well take advantage of that, leverage it. So anyway, that's the way I go. And if you're in a town court or a city court or a village court, I'm not going into the state court. I'm going right up to the feds, because that's the only place you're going to get justice. And again, they need a place to hang their hat before they're going to stick their neck out for someone they don't know, and it appears that they don't like anyway. So
thank you very much. I'm going to work on my theories and figure out how, and all I got to learn how to do now is write the paperwork.
Well, read a lot of our paperwork, and you can strip out this and that and use our memorandums, whatever you want to do. Just make it work in, around your court case. That's all.
All right. Thank you very much.
All righty. Okay. Do we have anyone else in the queue? Crystal from Connecticut. By the way, Gerard, did you wake up yet? We'll still be sleeping. Okay, let's go, Crystal from Connecticut. Go right ahead, Crystal.
Hello.
How you doing, Crystal? And by the way, we're coming to the end of our program anyway, but go ahead, Crystal.
Yeah, did you get that package I sent you?
I did get it. It's sitting on my desk right now.
Okay.
I haven't had time. I just breezed through it. I haven't had time to really review through it.
All right. Did you get the package in there? An envelope.
Yes, I got that. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Yeah. Okay. I went last Tuesday. And
was Mr. GE there?
No, he was not there. And they said he didn't have to be there because he gave an affidavit. And the federal judge, she said, well, you
Mr. GE gave an affidavit?
Yes. Oh, now
did he speak through his lawyer?
The lawyer was there, and the
but the affidavit, was it an affirmation or an affidavit from the lawyer, and speaking on behalf of his client?
No.
No.
And,
okay. I'm surprised.
And she told me that doesn't matter because under the state general state assembly, which I got the document, it came out in 2011, who was attorney, she goes, well, the state rep and the legislators put that together. I said, but they're all lawyers. She goes, no, they're not lawyers. She goes, the lawyers didn't put this together. I said, in other words, I said, all the people there, almost 90% of the people I'm the legislator, our attorney. So, but I just left it there because I said, don't argue. You know, I remember, you know.
Right.
And she was trying to be cordial, and she's like, well, I don't know. She goes, but under the state statute, and then I mentioned, was it USC 42A? And she goes, well, that has nothing to do with it. And then I said, about the attorneys and judges. I said, isn't it a conflict of being an attorney and a judge? She goes, well, it's supposed to be, but I don't think we have that here, which we all know, of course, there's quite a few. Now, the one who's been giving me the biggest hassle, I hear...
Well, I'm interested, what I'm interested in is, what did Mr. G.E. say in his affidavit? And how did his affidavit start? Did it start with affidavit of Mr. G.E.? And he starts that, you know, I'm so-and-so, and I have knowledge of what I'm going to talk about, or what's going to proceed, and, you know, I mean... How did I'm blown away that someone actually brought an affidavit into the court.
Yeah, no, there was nothing like that. And she gave them, she said she's going to sign so they can take my house. It was like they were dancing around the table. In other words,
right.
You don't
let me go back, though, to this affidavit, because I'm very curious. Are you sure there wasn't a lawyer who wrote the paper and said that Mr. G.E., speaking through his lawyer, says nothing like that? You should go reread that and make sure. Because if it says that, that's hearsay.
Okay,
and I don't care what, you know, I know lawyers disagree with that and so on and so forth, but I don't care what you do, it's still secondhand information.
Mm-hmm.
He said, she said, and you can't hold the individual liable for lying to his lawyer because he's not making the sworn affidavit. It's the lawyer who's believing, and the lawyer's not lying. He's saying what his client said, you know? So no one's held accountable.
And she said he didn't have to be there because he gave an affidavit. They gave a vice president a new name out there. He's the one who's speaking on behalf.
Right. Did you send that affidavit to me in a package?
No, I just got that afterwards. I'll get that over to you.
Yeah, I really want to see that. I'd like to, maybe I can give you some thoughts on that. I really want to see that affidavit.
Okay, I will definitely get that, yes. And what else? There was something else.
This is like discovering something new in life. I've never seen this.
Remember I was telling you about the WPCA? About the water bill and the sewer bill, and I said, mm-hmm. and how they've been taking everybody's home. They took over 80% of the people's homes. So, you know, like, I put that whole formula together, even, like, for that water bill, and it's, like, the units, four units. There's 748 gallons in a unit that makes one unit of water. So mine came to, like, three units. So you multiply that 3.69. So your bill is no more than almost like, what, $10, $11. Then they double the bill for the supposed owner of the water. But I said, well, God gave us water free to myself, of course. And then they put a basic service on it. So your bill comes to $25. Then they piggyback off that bill and give you a WPCA bill stating that's how much water you use. So they've been ripping off the people. So I said, the only way you can make an equivalence to that amount is if you have a laundromat. And even that wouldn't even be that amount of money, you know? And I said, furthermore, the majority of people, you're not running a dishwasher, washing clothes, you're showering around the clock to even waste that kind of water. On that bill, it should only be, if it was a legitimate bill, the WPCA bill should only be like 21 cents. Off of that $12, right? They got it up to $25, so they've been perpetrating fraud on that. So when I broke it down, and I said, and they slapped this lien on the property, guess what, John? The no-good attorney who's been robbing everybody, along with the attorney that's trying to take my house, her face turned as red as a beet. Unbeknown, I said, oh, my God. When I turned around, like, what's she looking at? It was the attorney who's been robbing everybody. His face, he looked like he wanted to die. Because everybody, as a matter of fact, there's a big meeting tomorrow at City Hall because they want to go up on the tax. And this guy, Epstein, Judas Epstein, is still in everyone's homes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also that MERS, M-E-R-S, like I sent you that package on how that's getting.
Did Mr. GE bring his contract or anything?
No contract, and that's what I asked. I said, where is the contract? She goes, he doesn't have to have a contract because you had a, because these, the mortgage, the fire department sold the mortgage.
Who said he didn't have to have a contract? Who said
the federal judge.
Really?
Under the state assembly. I said, I got the release of my mortgages, and here's the paperwork right here on each state. And I said, and also, one thing I was sitting there going over that, because this is the work I used to do. You know when you buy any property, and the date you buy the property, you got to record it in the clerk's office, right? So I said, I remember the date I even bought my house, June 6, 2000. All righty? And so when you look at it, that's the date. And then the mortgage release, it was May, I guess I think it was May 13, 2011. Mr. GE Federal Credit Union put their name on my property. It was November 13th, 2014. The name went on my property 3 years and 8 months later. Where is the contract? When did I buy this property?
So they did a non-judicial foreclosure on you and tried to, in that process, started to move the property over to themselves, which is part of their game. That's part of their fraud. Now, the other thing is what interest does Mr. GE have in your property anyway? How much money did he put into the property that you have to pay him back anything? Because he didn't put anything out. And was he the original, what would I call it, the original...
mortgage holder, no.
Well, again, I hate to call him mortgage
lender.
Well, they're not the lender either. So,
right. I had nothing to do with
them. They don't hold the mortgage. They didn't lend the money. Look at, they're the ones that the agent who came in and made the deal between you and the Fed, and they went to the Fed window and got the money and transferred it, and it was all done in digits, and they got paid their piece of action right off the top because you have to pay the points at the closing, so everything's done there. So they're done and paid with. Was Mr. GE that agent to begin with?
No.
So there again, you don't even know who Mr. GE is then.
Right, exactly.
Boy, you got a lot of points here you could really run them down hard with, and I would be thinking moving this into a federal court at some point in time. Look, they're not giving you due process, are they?
No.
As a matter of fact, all of this together, with everything you've done and the points that we just spoke about brought together, is no doubt fraud in the court by that judge.
Mm.
That's a federal issue right there.
Okay.
Because he's denying due process. He's outside the jurisdiction. Boy, you got a lot here. Right there.
Okay.
That's where, if you're in jeopardy, you think you're at that point where they're going to take it now?
Yes.
Okay, move it to the federal court.
Okay, now I got to file the paperwork. I could.
And remember, look at on the federal court. To move something into the federal court, you know, you're going to have to use a statute to get in there. And there's good statutes. You know, the U.S. 18, U.S. 42. You know, those. I'll get you the numbers if you want them. But it's when
Please.
You're acting under the color of law, and they're violating your rights. And it becomes a conspiracy when there's more than one person involved. Then it becomes a conspiracy, and it is a conspiracy ultimately because the judge is committing fraud on the court. There's a wink, a nod, and a handshake somewhere with the mortgage company coming in, so the lawyers there, they're working together to steal from you, and the judge is going along with it. So, again, the big one right off the bat is due process, violation of your right of due process, violation. They don't have the jurisdiction, fraud on the court, and all of this is under color of law, under codes.
Okay, yes, definitely. And what does it cost? So I got to file in the federal court here?
Yeah, within your district, yeah. And you got to go after the judge very specifically because that's the guy that's violating you. You see, remember, you're not going to battle your case over there. You're going to fight the case that he doesn't have jurisdiction over you in this case, number one, and that he's not giving you due process. Those are violations. Those are injuries, okay? So you go after the judge for monetary injuries on that. But you want the case closed down, and you do that by the court order coming out of the Fed. You got to make a good wherefore clause, cease and desist, okay? Because they're operating outside of the law. Look, if they have the right, the proper right to take your property away, show what interest you put into my property, show me my contract, show me the wedding signatures. They don't have anything anyway. And what interest did you put into this property? Do you think I owe you something? And who are you, by the way? Because I didn't make any deal with you back in whatever year it was that you got your home. I don't even know who you are. I didn't agree to have my contract, if there was a contract, to be changed from one place to another. And by the way, what are you doing with this mortgage? Are you monetizing them? Are you bringing them together and packaging them? What do you do? Because that's what he's doing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And right there, that's a securities violation.
Okay, yeah, so, because... And that law, she said, well, it came into effect... she said it's the Connecticut Assembly. And I also saw a sheriff today. I got to get that new booklet and stuff if you can. You know, because I said it's...
I'll try to throw you some notes. Let me go through some of the stuff you have here. I'll throw you some notes and ideas. Definitely look at my memorandums that we have up there and to use a jurisdiction. Get a rock-solid jurisdiction. I'll give you some examples of some things, okay? And I don't know whether I'll be able to do it this week, but how fast is this happening on you?
Well, I went there last Tuesday, so she's going to lift it. And I think we got to go back on the 21st.
Okay, so you probably have, they're probably not going to do anything till after Christmas, although these people are evil. They may try to throw you out on Christmas Eve.
All right.
They're not really going to do that, but I wouldn't.
I wouldn't put nothing past them.
Exactly.
You know.
But, okay, so, I'll try to do something this week or early next week and throw some stuff together and just give you some ammo that you can take in.
Yeah, and when I do a question, when I do a federal case, I got to pay right then and there, right?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I've filed federal cases before and got away without having to pay, but they've locked that down and given me a hard time. I'm ready to sue a judge right now over my money because I had to pay twice, okay? I don't want to talk over the air.
Yeah, right, I understand.
But the fraud is an easy proof on this one. And the lame position this judge has is, you know, maybe he didn't even go to school. I don't know.
Yeah, because I just got finished filing bankruptcy 13 just to prolong it. And it's supposed to be February 18th, 2018. And now they pushed it all the way up because I put the papers in there and they had the question to answer. And I'm like, they don't have to answer nothing, basically.
Mm.
That's why I was so shocked. And another thing, I didn't even know I had a court date last Tuesday.
With that. Yeah.
Right. And what happened, guess when the papers came? It came, my court date was on Tuesday the 5th. And when I got home, I just got the letter that I was supposed to be in court on the 5th. And they were shocked that I showed up And the reason why I was there is because, thank God, I called to find out when I had to be in court.
You know, there is a, goodness, I'm trying to think what it's called. There's a filing, and we brought this up a couple of weeks ago, a month ago in a conversation with somebody. When you buy a home, you file it. I'm trying to think of the something act that you file it under into the county, which means it can't be taken away from you.
I think what they mentioned, homestead.
Yeah, the Homestead Act, okay? Now, the mortgage companies may think that they're special and that they can take it away from you. Okay, first of all, they can't take it away from you. They have no interest in it. They didn't put no money into it. They probably originally didn't even, wasn't even the agents of the exchange. And the exchange and the deal really went between you and the Fed. Okay, but for some reason they seem to, they send you a bill and people pay them. So, you know, go figure that out. That's how dumb we are. We pay bills that don't even exist. So we're you're paying them three or four times the amount. They're sending a piece of that action to the Fed, so they're getting some money. But that's going into pockets of people. It's not going back into the banking system because the whole thing is a fraud to really just destroy America anyway. It's all part of the process of bankrupting America.
I bought my house for $153 in 2000, right? Mm-hmm. Paid all these years, sold property, paid it down, and even with that PHH mortgage, whom they perpetrated the fraud, and that's when I said, wait a minute, my house has been paid off, you know? And I said, who signed my name? And that's when they backed out of it real quick on the final. They had a big lawsuit.
Well, there again, you've got a crime that you need to bring into the federal court with this case also. You've got to bring that crime into the court, okay?
Okay, now listen to this.
Thing.
Right, and one other thing. So when they're taking my house, listen to this. They are going to sell my house. They said I owe them $154,000. I said, are they out of their freaking mind? I paid $153,000, which I had paid off in 2011. Now it's up to $154,000. More than what I paid for the house and paid off how many times, and I figured I paid close to about $400,000.
You should sue them back for the money that they took. They had no right or authority to take from you in the first place. That was a fraud,
right,
too. I want my money back.
And okay, and then they turned around, and you know what she said? This attorney, not please. So I went and I got the grievance, because I'm writing a grievance on every last one of these attorneys' names that appear. Guess what she said? And we're selling your house for $200,000, so you'll probably get about $40,000. I said $40,000.
They're not going to give you that because they take it all anyway.
Right. I said $40,000. I said my house is worth, my property is worth almost $700,000. She goes, well, we have a limitation, and that's all you're going
to
get. I said
you
must
be
out of your
federal court now. I think if you feel that it's at that point where you're not going to be able to go much further with these people, because you know the fact that they've played out so long makes you a point all the way through. Okay, how
right.
long have you been fighting this battle in this court?
Now it's been over. They started in 2006, and then they came to 2013. This is 2017.
So generally speaking, from the beginning to the end, you're looking at 11 years they've been, you know, pussyfooting around, so to speak. And so they know that they're doing something evil. You know, otherwise, you know, justice could be quick and swift, and it should be.
Well, that's what the attorney...
They certainly can't do it with this one. Did they do the non-judicial foreclosure and you caught them in the game and then for what?
But now, what's the non-judicial? Let's see, I got life use.
Well,
when they don't
send you many papers or anything, but they tell you that they're going to do foreclosures, they send you a foreclosure, they file it with the court. No judge usually signs it, and they try to push it through that way. In the process, as a year or two goes by, they change the name because no one's looking, no one's arguing, and they change the name over to their name, and you know, eventually dispossess you as someone who's...
Well, see, what I do, I go and get my copies of my deed records. So I got so much stuff filed. Everything I do, I file it, I record it on my deed. As a matter of fact, I even put life use on my property. So she goes, you got life use? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I got to get going because it's late, but
okay.
I just want to finish off with this one thing here. This is very important. Do not overload, as you go federal case with this, do not overload it. Don't get lost in arguments and things that are irrelevant to that court. You're in there for constitutional violations. They don't have jurisdiction. They're fraud on the court. Those are the issues, okay? Your wherefore clause has to make sure that it clearly states the fact that you're looking for them to cease and desist and leave you alone and don't ever bother you again. Okay, that's
okay.
What you're looking as part of your wherefore clause. You also want to be looking for injuries. Look at, I would then, once you win the case, then I would go back into the state court and sue them for the $153,000 that they had no authority, right, or to take that money. That's if you want to do that. You'll end up in federal court with that one too, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, Crystal, good talking to you. I'll get you something out, like I said, at the end of the week. Remind me on Monday if you don't get nothing, all right?
Okay, will do. Thank you so much, John.
All right, with that, we're going to end our program. Thanks for everyone coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, tomorrow, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to be having a meeting in our alternate room. If you go up to our website, click on the weekly call, come down to the committee meetings, click on that, and you'll see access into another room. It's a free conference call room also, but it's different. It runs a little different. And everybody should try to join us. We really got to get this project going or with the sheriffs. We got to get knowledge to our sheriffs. We want to get these booklets out, and we want to make a plan. And maybe we'll be talking about a few other issues too, possibly, but that's going to be the main focus. Okay, thank you, and good night.